Hey, everybody, and welcome to episode 569 of Video Game Apocalypse. I'm your host, Mike Oroparas, coming to you from the Vinny Garcia Memorial Studio of the Airwaves. If you want it to be the U Memorial Studio of the Airwaves, go to patreon.com/lasertime and join us at the $20 level. Or if you just want to support us and get access to bonus shows, join us at the $5 level. Who's joining me now?
Zip McHorsling, Chris Antista.
And...
my name is Matthew Allen, and I had to have the Bill and Ted 69 joke explained to me as a child.
Congratulations. And special guest.
Star MLB shortstop, Dwiggett Rortugal.
You guys also have awesome names. What the hell?
Greg
someone
Moore.
Pick a good name for me.
Yeah. Also, like,
how about Todd Gonzalez? You want to be Todd Gonzalez?
Famous Hispanic surname, Gonzalez. Yeah, let's go with that.
You have a simple baseball name right in front of you. Batty Allen.
Yeah, well, okay, fair enough. It's also a good Halloween name.
But yes, Greg Moore.
Greg, man.
Is there anything you would like to plug? Where can people hear or see or read more of you?
I don't tweet or stream the way I had been for years, but... I'm a musician again for the first time in many years, and I have a single coming out in the next few weeks,
but I don't know
where it's going to be distributed yet, or what my like stage name is going to be yet, because Greg Moore is really boring. Maybe I should go with Dwiggett Rortugal.
Dwiggett Rortugal.
But I guess I'll, like, can I post about that on the LaserTime community? Is that an abuse of the community?
I mean, everybody else does it. Go for it.
Does it count as pop culture if I'm not popular?
Not you're aspiring to be popular.
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
Yeah.
It's going to be, anyway, it's going to be a 40s, called the song will be called Atomic Girl. So if you, like, search that on your streaming service, like, a month from now, it'll probably bring up something.
Yeah. You also recently worked on the English translation for Bulk Slash, and I just wanted to say I have since had a chance to play that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool.
And number one, it's a fantastic game for Saturn. Number two, you guys did an amazing job. The voice acting is super profesh. It's just great across the board.
Hell yeah. So.
Thank you.
If you have the means to check that out somehow, I recommend you do that.
Yeah, if you're into the set. We did that, and after that we did another game called Stellar Assault with a very similar treatment. So if you like one, you'll probably like the other.
Rad. Okay, well, it's going to be a fun show. Not a whole lot happening this week, but we do have a fun and breezy top five topic that I thought of when I was doing research for last week's show, which you might remember was Games Beloved for Their Jank. And one of the games that I looked at for that was Way of the Samurai 4, which is part of it's the goofiest in an already goofy series. And it has a bizarre translation decision where there is a woman who, in the original Japanese, she's like a British Marine colonel in the 19th century, so suspend your disbelief. But her name in the Japanese version is Melinda Decameron. And Decameron, or Decameron, as it might be read by
Greg is laughing,
people.
And I don't know where this is going.
So
yet.
Deca, like, this is an intentional pun that Japanese people would pick on. Deca means, like, huge or massive, and Meron would be read like melon. So Decameron, but it's like, oh, she's got huge tits. So they just decided to keep the pun, ditch the original name for the English translation, and so she is Melinda Megamelons in the U.S. That is a weird decision for a localizer.
Well, I salute their willingness to preserve the joke. Mm. I feel like there has to be an actual surname that could have preserved that joke. The problem is that Megamelons... there's no family with that name.
No.
You could start one.
The illustrious Megamelons clan.
Yeah. My name is Busty McMemories.
Yeah, this is my father, Arthur Megamelons.
Of Vancouver Megamelons. Mm-hmm.
And his father, Morty Megamelons, first of his line.
President William J. Megamelons III.
Heir to the cantaloupe fortune, oh, the irony.
But yeah, so I thought it would be fun to take a look at famously weird localization decisions.
Gimme.
And since Greg works in translation, I thought you'd be an ideal guest for this. And you actually suggested a bunch of the things that we're going to talk about, which are, you know, maybe well-trodden ground, but still fun to discuss.
Gimme.
All right, let's jump in with...
Number 5.
X-Men, welcome to Dark.
This was already on the list before it became a pretty popular reference in a recent episode of television, right?
Was it referenced in an episode of television?
We talked about this today.
Well, the arcade game was
referenced. Yeah, the X-Men show. Arcade game. I'm specifically referring to that weird English Welcome to Die.
Oh, so not the X-Men arcade game then.
It is the X-Men arcade
Why
game.
Are you confusing this? The X-Men 97 show just had a reference to the arcade game.
Yeah,
we are talking about the arcade really game. The arcade this game. Is taking forever.
All right. Yeah, so the X-Men 1992 arcade game has that weird line from Magneto, "Welcome to Die." I'm not really sure why it was localized that way. That is clearly an English-speaking voice actor doing it.
Yeah, you'd think he would raise his hand, but I'm also, like, I've been trying to, like, backwards engineer what the Japanese might have been. I can't really figure it out. I wonder if there is a Japanese text version somewhere. I mean, it could have been just like "Welcome to your death," maybe. But
yeah, maybe they didn't want to repeat "Welcome to your doom" from Altered Beast.
Or maybe should have done that.
It was supposed to read like "Welcome to oh just die," and but the reading is off. But it made me think about. Because I haven't worked in localization as much as Greg has, but we've done a little, and it's like trying to fathom doing that without email. It seems insane. And is one of the only things that I think sort of explains this. By the time the code hits our shores and the news gets back to Japan, like, maybe it's too late already? Or maybe it's like, too late, Marvel approved it, can't go back and redo it.
Yeah. Well, I think this was probably of a time where they just had a guy on the Japan side who knew some English, who was quickly scratching something down. Like, you know, especially in arcade games, I don't think that they even shopped it out to a translator a lot of the time. Just for the record, so I don't feel guilty, I want to clarify, I don't localize games, and I never have. I've worked as a translator for various other media for a lot of years, and, you know...
We talked about a lot.
We dealt with localization folks at Capcom a lot, so we got a lot of their insight. But my background is not in games localization per se. I just want to.
Yeah, like you've done games, you've done translation.
I'm going to call Greg a liar here and say that his only interest is translation or localization, and he's never done any translation.
That's well, it is. Yes.
Just want to muddy the waters so no one knows what's real.
Come at us.
So confusing. But that line is the most famous, but there is a pattern of weird stuff. So that is Konami in 1992 put this out. This was after they'd already done like Ninja Turtles and I think The Simpsons arcade game. Stuff that didn't have really weird translations. But the acting in this is just kind of strange.
That was Mystique, not Magneto. Magneto is in another place. Go, X-Men.
Something weird about Magneto is in another place.
It sounds like something Toad should say to you at the end of a level.
Right. Our princess is in another place.
Nothing moves the blob.
There you go. And yeah, it's not even Magneto's only weird line.
I am Magneto, master of magnet. Come, X-Chicken.
Did he say X-Chicken?
He said X-Chicken.
You can't spell Magneto without it. Neato. Die!
I like how he's a master of only one magnet.
Yeah,
it's a very
single
nice...
magnet. I bought it at the Rite Aid.
It's a big magnet. It's very nice. It's very big. The magnet's
An
very
old,
big.
Tremendous magnet. Biggest magnet you've ever seen.
The biggest magnet.
Yeah, it's funny because his performance does make him sound like he's a trained voice actor.
He doesn't sound like a Japanese guy winging it.
No.
It sounds like AI wrote this 30 years ago or whatever. This is the first AI game.
That's what makes it more confusing. Well, it sounds like a native English speaker or someone at least fluent in English.
Yeah, if you look at like the House of the Dead games, where it literally sounds like
don't
all
come.
The actors
care,
are
care. Don't come.
Like easy. It doesn't sound like they're human.
I'm wondering based on the clip that I'm about to play. So they do cut up and like, you know, mash together a lot of different samples. It wouldn't at all surprise me if he said something like, "Welcome to my, whatever place this is, Mutantopolis." I forget
Madripoor.
His
utopia.
Yeah, his utopia.
That's a good theory too.
Prepare to die, and then it just didn't fit like the memory limits, and so they had to cut it down.
I thought you were saying that's that maybe it was a last minute change. Don't say this X-Men location. We don't want to use that here. Or, yeah, it's a compression issue. It just jumped or skipped.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't excuse it. If you remember, they remade it, or they brought it out on 360, and they redid the voice acting.
Did they?
They kept two things.
Yeah, but they kept that line, right?
They kept the line, but they re-recorded it.
That's because it's iconic, yeah. That's people would have raised hell if they didn't.
Mm-hmm. It's like if you said, all of your bases now belong to us. Like, who like, wants to hear that shit?
But it was not easy to hear all those Magneto lines, by the way. Because the big thing about this arcade game, if you recall, it's the arcade game I still see it a lot. Its biggest problem... the two screens. One is always way worse than the other, and that problem existed like 1 year into the arcade scene. Like in 1993, one TV looked like shit, so you wanted to be on that side.
Mm-hmm.
But it looked more like a arcade game growing out of another arcade game, if you didn't have the pedestal one.
Well, did they do the same thing like Ninja Warriors did, where like... and I know that one is like three TVs, but like two of them are reversed and they like actually are being projected into mirrors that are next to the main monitor.
Shit. I want to say that the two setup is not projected, but I'm sure they did. What did you call that? The rear projection for like a 60-inch with the pedestal one? Because this is a huge game that came out in many different formats.
Yeah.
I love this fucking game.
I think
it's kind of staggering how hard they tried back then with the arcade games, just to keep it novel, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, the old entire, like Afterburner being like a full-on cockpit that moved.
Was this a six-player one? Like,
yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it was, and they'd done a bunch of four-players, so they clearly had to up the ante with this and make it ridiculous.
Because this is like, of the Konami beat-em-ups you mentioned, this is my least favorite. It doesn't mean it's bad at all.
Oh, no.
But I was astonished when I saw that clip of the X-Men 97 show, like, those are all TMNT references. What's going on here? What's going on? Oh, I guess it's even more in their hearts and minds than the X-Men game is as well. Boo-hoo.
Oh, well.
But you can get your own arcade 1-Up copy, and I have no idea if they... I think they tried to squeeze six players onto an arcade 1-Up, which typically those machines are the width of my forearm. I don't know how you do that.
I have more weird Magneto lines here.
You are dead! I kill you, ex-chicken!
See, when
ex-chicken
I said...
Chicken again?
They cut up some of them. Yeah, ex-chicken. He uses that a few times. He's really proud of coming up with that. You can tell.
Nobody calls me ex-chicken.
I'm gonna roast Wolverine good. I'm going to call him ex-chicken.
Was he still Australian in this?
Am I remembering which one was it? Was that an Aqua Teen Hunger Force episode or a South Park episode with a dude talking about chickens? It was like a witch doctor with the chickens.
Oh, BillyWitchDoctor.com. One convenient locations in Africa.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Aqua Teen then.
Yeah. But yeah, anyway, this line became so immortal that it got made fun of in Marvel vs. Capcom 3.
Magneto, welcome to die!
Learn now why they call me the Master of Magnetism.
So that is Nolan North as Deadpool, making fun of Magneto when they meet on the battlefield.
Oh, neat.
So wait, canonically, is he the Master of Magnetism or the Master of Magnet?
Magnet.
According to the arcade game, he's Master of Magnets.
Magnet. It's a show. It was a movie studio. They put out the Tim and Eric billion-dollar movie.
Right, yeah.
He's since gotten more of a budget, so he can work with multiple magnets and the concept of magnetism, but No, he just had the one magnet back in the day.
You got to expand your focus, especially at his age. He survived the Holocaust, you know.
Yeah, he was just a guy who like would knock over convenience stores like, look at the, I can pick up nails with my magnet.
Actually, I wonder.
Quake in fear.
I haven't seen that addressed. I only read like the House of M X-Men comics recently. But Captain America was frozen in World War II, but Magneto survived it. So he's like 100 years old.
Now, yes, that's the thing.
Yeah. But it's
that might be one of the reasons they're doing the X-Men cartoon in the 90s, because Magneto is literally like...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you are being beaten up by someone who survived World War II, you kind of deserve it. It's almost impossible. Hitting you with their sleep apnea mask.
Yeah. Well, maybe the magnetism keeps him young.
Ah, that's true. Keeps the iron out of his heart.
Exactly. That's what makes you old, right?
Yeah.
Who knows? Who cares?
I don't know.
Is that good?
X-Men Arcade. It's fun. Let's move along to...
The shit.
Number four.
I know you all know this music.
Mortal Kombat. Fatal Fury.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. All of those. Wow. How'd you guess?
Samurai Showdown.
Yeah. Street Fighter 2.
Oh.
Had the immortal line, you must defeat Sheng Long to stand a chance. Mm-hmm. Americans don't know what Sheng Long is. We thought it was a character. We invented a story where he was Ryu's sensei who taught him how to fight with karate. So then that led to EGM's famous April Fool's joke in an issue of Electronic Gaming Monthly from 1992, where they said, like, oh, here's how you get to fight Sheng Long. You have to have, like, 99 draw matches in a row with M. Bison. And then...
Jesus. People complain about April Fool's jokes today. Like, that was, like, holy... I mean, I guess... Worst case scenario, you have to play more Street Fighter, but you also have to play 99 rounds and like, oh, I guess I did it wrong. Let's start over. Yeah.
In an arcade, by the way.
In an arcade.
So, good luck. But yeah, I as a kid reading that in junior high, I fell for it. And a friend of mine pointed out like, no, it's fake. Look at where the guy who sent it in is from. Fooled again. Ha. Like, Hawaii is H-I.
Yeah, where is that? It's probably some weird Arkansas thing. Probably. God, those abbreviations are weird.
Yeah, fooled again.
But this really encapsulates, you know, the magic of that era where you would see something that was weird and alien and have no way to like investigate it further.
Right.
And then it would just go to the playground to be turned into urban legends and stuff.
Exactly.
And I mean, like, Mortal Kombat really capitalized on that.
Yeah.
There were lots of rumors about Mortal Kombat, and some of them they later turned into actual features in subsequent games, you know, like background elements in the stages.
Error messages becoming characters.
Yeah, Street Fighter did the same thing, right? Street Fighter, I think, eventually made the red fireballs like a feature instead of a bug. Like, so they've always leaned into it.
Yeah, man, all combos are breaking the game. That's where they come from.
Yeah. So this one was like, so why is this a case of weird translation or localization? Because whoever translated it, so the characters for Dragon Punch, if you transliterated them into Chinese, it would come out as Sheng Long, like Dragon Fist Punch, whatever. So for whatever reason, rather than translating it as you must defeat my Dragon Punch to stand a chance, they just use the Chinese pronunciation of these Chinese characters, the kanji, as Sheng Long. And that gave rise to a bizarre urban legend.
How did anyone think Americans were going to be smart enough to understand that?
I don't know.
So, yeah, I'm very curious who was responsible for that, because it sounds like something a machine translation would produce, because it's just, like, that's a word they invented for the game. So a machine would look at that and be like, there's no choice but to translate it literally. And
put like a kanji in there or something like that. And,
well, in other words, you just have to translate the individual kanji and you would come up with like Dragon Fist. Dragon Punch is Shoryu, right?
Shoryu Ken, Rising Dragon Fist.
Yeah. I think Sheng Long is just Shoryu. Sheng being Shou and Long being Ryu, which is Rising Dragon.
Oh, okay. I had that wrong.
So,
Samurai gun, man.
Like a machine. I think what happens sometimes is people, like maybe this was the mindset in Japan at the time anyway, is that they presume that the Chinese reading is more default or universal than the Japanese reading, since the Japanese reading of a kanji is a deviation from the origin, because kanji came from China. So someone either overthought it or underthought it, but it's a very interesting choice that they didn't, because what would have been more logical maybe would be you have to defeat the Rising Dragon, which would still be wrong and nonsensical.
But it still could have hinted at a new character.
That's true. Like, oh, there's a dragon in here somewhere.
There should be. You should be fighting a dragon at some point in Street Fighter, for fuck's sake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what's weird about Shang Long, though, is eventually they did introduce Ryu and Ken's actual master, and then they didn't name him Shang Long.
No, like, Gouken.
Yeah, Gouken is just like, he's inspired by Shang Long, and I'm like, why don't you just do what Mortal Kombat does and lean into it and own it and be like, yeah, this is Shang Long. We've talked about it all the time. It's weird that it's almost just like it was response to that. Like, no, you guys were wrong. This is the actual guy. It's like, why? Who cares? I don't give a fuck about Gouken. I want to know who Shang Long is, dude. Come on.
He's sadly Ben Kingsley, and he's been faking it the whole time. Iron Man 3 reference lost on everybody. God, I suck.
Oh, I got it now. Then
Street Fighter had a secret character eventually who then became a series staple. Like,
Akuma.
That was apparently inspired by that hoax, but for some reason they didn't want to make that Shang Long either.
That's what I'm saying.
It probably didn't make sense.
That's another interesting localization choice, though, is that, you know, Akuma. Akuma. He's not called that in Japan.
That's true.
He's called Gouki. Mm-hmm. And I've heard, I never paid attention to the story, but I hear that they changed his characterization quite a bit to make him more of like an evil villain type in the overseas version. That's what we got.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in Japan, I think he was framed as more of like an anti-hero.
Mm.
Which is weird, because I actually like the U.S. story that he's sort of the manifestation of all the bad parts of Ryu. Like, when Ryu breaks bad, like, that's, he's basically acting like Akuma. Like,
yeah, cool, because then they released Evil Ryu, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So it kind of became...
and Violent Ken. I love it so much.
Violent.
He should make an appearance in Barbie,
and then,
too.
That's my favorite Insane Clown Posse member.
Violent Ken.
And I think the word for evil in Evil Ryu is the same word that they use for... that got translated as violent for Violent Ken. I don't know why they did that.
It makes more... It's more scary. Like... I mean, granted, this guy fights for a living, but this one's way more violent.
This is the violent version of Ken.
The violent version of the fighter, the famous fighter.
Shang Long, I think, also became a character in the Malibu Comics Street Fighter series, which was canceled, I think, after its second issue, because they decided to end with, like, Ken gets kidnapped, and then Ryu is sent his scalp in the mail. And Capcom's like, yeah, no, we're not letting you do this shit.
I didn't read it, but I only heard it through Brett, and it still cracks me up. Balrog punching Dalsim's elephants till they die.
Jesus.
Like, it occurs in the comics.
And it's like perfect, needlessly edgy early 90s shit in comics.
And that it will now probably become antiquated, the attitude of, oh, you want to adapt our game? Just do whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We're okay with it. You're Malibu Comics. Of course we trust you.
You're G.I. Joe. You're Jean-Claude Van Damme. Just do whatever. It doesn't matter.
I'm surprised we haven't brought up like the other second most famous Street Fighter localization story, which is the fact that you guys are talking about Balrog and M. Bison, and the fact that in the States they had to swap the names because it's too obvious. Like, oh, that's Mike Tyson. That is a Mike Tyson ripoff. Yeah, we couldn't possibly call him M. Bison.
I thought there might have been a more elaborate story there, because it doesn't matter. You're still covered by any legal stretch by calling the character M. Bison. it wouldn't matter. Yeah,
well, it might have just been an abundance of caution, but
yeah. I think that's probably what it was.
I mean, this speaks to how disposable these things were back then. They probably didn't realize this was going to be a global competitive sport 30 years
later. If I can do an impression of the Capcom office during 1992, don't overthink it. It's Taco Day.
I mean, and the way they got mixed up in the States, like Vega is like that. That's a legit Spanish name. Okay, that's a good name for your Spanish Matador character. M. Bison, sure, he's Major Bison, whatever. Then you've got a boxing heavyweight champion named after a Lord of the Rings monster.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the one that doesn't quite fit.
What is the origin of that that word Balrog? Because they've used that in a lot of stuff.
But Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
That's what it's from?
I don't know. Michael would know.
It sounds like Irish folklore. Like it's.
It sounds mythical.
Yeah, I think like it's Gaelic. Probably a mythical creature. Which
I think it's biblical. I don't know. My Trump Bible biblical, hasn't come up.
I feel like
it hasn't arrived yet. He assured me all of the magic spells work great.
I love that. He even announced it like the literal metaphorical day that Jesus was supposed to have gone into the temple to throw out the money traders because they were making a mockery of the church. Trump's like, I'm launching a Bible.
Read my favorite, 2 Corinthians. Actual Trump quote. Wonderful.
Yeah, we changed it from the Roman numeral to the Arabic one.
Somebody did a compilation
2 Corinthians.
Of his responses with direct questions about religion in the Bible. Do you read the Bible?
Yeah. All the time.
What's your favorite passage? Book. That's personal. I don't like to talk about that. Yeah. Do you like the Old Testament or the New Testament?
Both.
Yeah.
Both equally good.
He could have gone like, what's your favorite verse? My favorite verse is Austin 3:16.
Yes.
That would have been amazing.
Nobody would have batted an eye.
Yeah. So, just looking at Balrog, and it's like, it's all either Lord of the Rings, Street Fighter, or various other things that have used it.
My confusion here is like
'30s. So,
like, and again, this is a rock solid impression of Japanese development. Oh man, hey Dan, we're in some weird legal territory here with this black boxer character named M. Bison. Like, ugh. Well, let's split the difference. Let's not do that. That puts us in a legal. But I don't want to go typing in 6 new letters.
Mm-hmm.
Let me move the M. Bison over here.
Yeah.
So you could be sued, you could be sued over both likeness or the name.
Dan, if you figure this problem out for us, we're going to name a Street Fighter character after you, buddy. Oh. And he's going to be awesome. Oh. No one's going to make fun of that guy.
Thank you so much, Ernie Capcom. It's a pleasure to work for you.
It does feel like one of those things. It was probably a decision they made on the spot in like 5 seconds, and it's trickled down and inconvenienced decades of people. For, you know, it's just it's still creating confusion to this day.
Mm-hmm. I'm just imagining it, and it doesn't have anything to do with my time at the company. Someone really not wanting to change it and doing the least amount of effort there. You said you wanted to change, but you didn't say how.
I can't tell you how many localization decisions are made just from the fact that, like, this is the space we have because of the Japanese characters.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So you have to make this concession because, like, we couldn't possibly increase the size of the speech bubble. That happens a lot.
Well, sent me a thing about Final Fantasy localizations and how, like, they had a 6-letter limit on all the spells, which is why there's a very destructive spell called Merton. And I always wondered, like, why is it called Merton? And it's because it's supposed to be Meltdown.
Mm-hmm.
fine, it's Merton.
No, it's, yeah, it's like you so crazy, Merton name. Lawrence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. That is a lot. That factors into a lot of these decisions.
Well, not only localization stuff, but like the whole look and design of games, especially back then, there was like a ROM shortage for a while in like the late 80s. And
Silicone shortage, right? Like, couldn't produce chips and enough memory and stuff like that.
So, like, Final Fight, you ever notice how perfect Cody's posture is in that game? He looks
Yeah,
of course.
Total flagpole.
It's because they were trying to make him as skinny as possible so he would take up less space.
Hilarious.
And then, like, I call him Hercules. Hagar.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the the upper half of his body doesn't move when he walks.
That's right. True.
These are all little corners that they cut to save
space. He looks like me when I glitch in Helldivers.
Now it's the whole personality of the game.
Yeah, constant bear hug. Final Fight's the best game ever.
Yeah. So you also pointed out another win quote. Guile's, go home and be a family man.
Oh, yeah.
Which, you know, people love to show that when he sang it to Chun-Li. Or,
I thought
it
was a reference
to fight me?
A Glengarry Glen Ross, like, nice guy, fuck you. Go home and play with your kids. That's what Guile would have said.
So this is, like, I looked up the Japanese, and it seems like this is sort of a mistranslation, but it's kind of cool anyway. Like, it comes off, it comes off really, like, condescending. Like, it's the first Street Fighter trash talk, you know?
What's he say to her in Japanese? Like, what's the equivalent meaning?
It's something like, I forget. It's like, I forget the exact thing, but it's like something like, don't you have a family to get back to?
Yeah, a family of your own to take care of. And
becomes a lot more sexist.
Go back to your home country.
I see. So it was a much more sexist quote against the woman being like, go home and take care of the family.
And racist.
He does that against everybody.
He says it against anyone.
Oh, okay.
It's something like, you should go home now. You must have your own, you must have a family too, or something like that.
Yeah.
Which is almost, it's more like sympathetic, you know? Yeah. It's like, like me, have a family.
His ending was like him celebrating with his family, right?
Yeah. The go home and be a family man thing always seemed strange to me because, like, he himself is a family man. So is he just saying, like,
you think that's bad?
Find happiness like me. Go home and be a family man. Drink your Ovaltine.
It does sound kind of hypocritical at a glance, though. It's like, well, what, you have a family.
Yeah, and he's like, it makes it clear he abandoned them to go on his revenge quest. And then they show up in his ending and they're like, no, we're fine with this. It's
really
good that you did this. Yeah. I'm Kyle's daughter.
That's what Peter Griffin's show is called in Japan.
Family Man.
Family Man.
Yeah. Family Man.
I'm just thinking of that clip you sent us where it's from the video game and like the mini game is trying to sit down properly. Mm-hmm. But then I was reading the YouTube. I was reading the YouTube comments and someone caught. They're like, check out like frame whatever, and like literally the game's so cheap he T-poses for a good 3 or 4 frames in there. In an animation of a character throwing himself in a chair and not sitting successfully, there's still a T-pose in there. Like, could you?
We were laughing at the Family Guy game because, oh man, a lot of voice acting that ages so poorly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Peter Griffin was not doing the Black Peter Griffin bit in the show when they did that same failing to sit down
game.
I'll just say that. Anyway, Street Fighter. It's
Street
great.
Fighter.
Let's
I've
move
heard of
along.
It.
Number 3. Now, I know
that translation is just no good.
Yeah. This game they forgot to localize.
No. I know Greg understands that. Everyone else might be more familiar with it sounding like this.
What the?
Mega Man, you must go after him. We don't know who he is. It's dangerous to leave him alone.
Dude, this...
I could, you know, I know you're thinking like, oh, we're going to make fun of this old chestnut. Actually, no. Greg pointed out like, this is one of the all-time strange things. Why was Rockman changed to Mega Man?
That's what I was going to complain about. Rockman is so perfect and everything fits the rock and roll theme of that game down to enemy names. And it's one of those like, just a one-off random like, let's do this. That has caused them problems for 40 years since, right? Where it's just like, what do we name this enemy now? Oh, I don't know.
Yeah. You had the musical character names Rock and his sister Roll, and then you had Proto Man was Blues. You had Bass and Treble. And
that's Bass. I played Mega Man 8.
It's
immaculate voice
Bass,
acting.
Bass like the fish, not like the bass.
I mean, I have to say that I don't think that Rockman would have flown.
I think it would seem more dated than it is now because that's not the dominant cool thing.
Yeah, I think Joe Marici at Capcom, who allegedly made this decision just because he thought it was a terrible name, has a good point because if you hear Rockman, Do you think a super robot who can take on other people's abilities? No, you think rock-themed superhero.
I thought it was I would have thought caveman game if I just heard Rockman.
Yeah.
I like cocaine!
I would have thought of The Thing from the Fantastic Four at that age. But also, it's like, although the music is really cool in that series...
It's not rock.
It's not like the game really has, like, a rock and roll motif, mm-mm. You know? It's not, integral to the game's identity, and certainly not to the robot's identity. And the rock and roll thing with his sister is really buried context, so, like...
Yeah, that's true.
It just sounds weird.
Yeah. Maybe if he'd had, like, a guitar, if it had been Johnny Bazooka Tone instead... you know, they could have sold the rock thing a little bit more clearly. But and also, like, the idea of, like, oh, it has a rock, paper, scissors approach, where this weapon beats this weapon, but this other weapon will beat you if you're using this weapon, etc., etc.
Oh.
It had been sued by Paper Man, the Oscar award-winning Disney short.
But yeah, so, like, the thing that always sticks out to me, because I was involved in the Mega Man Legends 3 project, and... spent a lot of time with my nose buried in Mega Man Legends games. So, like, if you're not familiar with that series, it was a spin-off that basically was a standalone. Yeah, they very loosely insinuated that it was tied to the canon, but it was like 1,000 years later or earlier, I forget.
Was his name just Rock there?
Yeah, so... The story is that there's a character who's just like Mega Man, except he's a teenager.
Yeah, he's not yet a man, Chris. He's just Rock. You gotta grow into man. He's
Rock
Boy.
Well, it's funny because he actually seems a little older than, like, Rockman in the main series seems like a little boy. He's like a little boy robot.
Yeah, he's basically Astro Boy with a helmet. Mm-hmm. That's the whole point of Mega Man.
Yeah, exactly. And in Mega Man Legends, he's more like an adolescent. You know, he's a little lanky.
That's some real Zelda shit.
So the idea is that he's adopted by this family called the Volnuts. I don't know where everything is weirdly Germanic.
You said it with such disdain. I like it.
Well, fucking Polly Volnuts over
go
here.
Go low, Polly Volnuts.
Oh wait, no, sorry. No, they're not called the Volnuts. It's been too long. They're called the Caskets.
Oh, even right. Barrel Casket.
It's Barrel and Roll Casket, which was probably supposed to be Gasket, because they're supposed to be like this, it's like a family mechanics.
They're not a coffin-themed robot family.
No, they're not like Undertakers. I always thought it was weird. I was like, why is her name Roll Casket? It sounds like a funeral mishap.
I also felt like Tron Bonne must have been a mistranslation, because Tron Bone would work on several levels. She's a pirate, so bones, and it sounds like
right.
Tron Bone.
Yeah, and that is yeah, it's Bong in the Japanese, and I guess in French too if you speak it. But
the ends are silent.
Yeah, so there's like layers of like issues here, but the big issue was that. Because he's not Rockman, he's a separate character. He's supposed to be a boy who was adopted by this family. For some reason, though, they don't call him Rock Casket, they call him Rock Volnut.
Huh.
And it's supposed to be like a first and last name. So instead of Rockman, he's just Rock.
That's right, the name in Japan is Mega Man Volnut, right? Or Rockman Volnut.
Rock... Well, he just goes by Rock Volnut in
the
story.
I mean the game name, though.
No, the game name is called Rockman Dash.
Oh,
It's worse than you... Yeah, and then Dash is an acronym.
Good lord.
I remember is that the H stands for Halcyon Days. Hold on. which I didn't know that term. That's like a weirdly literary expression to cram into one initial of an acronym.
Yeah, a pretty heady thing to introduce in a game where you kick
before
dogs.
You read what the actual acronym is, let's go around. Everyone, Dash, Michael, what do you think it's
dumb
for?
Ass shitty Halcyon Days.
Yeah, okay, Chris?
Daddy Asian shit house.
I'm going to dudes are super horny. And Greg, real one?
Correct. All right, it's Dig Outers Adventure Stories in Halcyon Days.
Not what worse than any of the ones we guessed, by the way. Ours could have been contenders.
Dig what
the
fuck Outers is this? How is Dig Outers one word?
Is this a congressional bill? That's the worst acronym I've ever heard.
It is. It's the worst one.
That should be Dosh.
The occupation that Rock holds in the game is Digger. He digs into underground ruins. Oh, God. and that was translated from the Japanglish word dig outer. Dig outa. And
dig outer?
They just made up, which means one who. And it's funny because he doesn't even dig, you know? He goes down elevators into these pre existing ruins and, shoots stuff.
They're all wide open.
Yeah. So anyway, that's beside the point, though. What I was getting at, though, is that when they localized it, they had to figure out what to call him because Rock wouldn't make sense because there wasn't this precedent of calling him Rockman all these years. So they just made his first name Mega Man with no space and then two capital M's, like it's an Irish surname or something.
Mega Man.
Mega Man.
Vincent Mega Man. Real piece of work, that guy.
Vince Mega Man.
And it just sounds like Rock is sort of like plausible as a name, or at least like a nickname that your sister calls you, but Mega Man is not.
No.
Especially for someone who's clearly an adolescent.
They'd been calling him, like, even in the U.S., like, when he's not Mega Man, he's Rock.
The Archie comic smartly just like committed to that and was like, he's Mega Man as a superhero or whatever, as a super fighting robot, but around the house he's just Rock.
Exactly.
Yeah, Charles Dutton. Mm-hmm.
Great show.
Which is so like drawing it back to Street Fighter, there are once in a while cases where they like try and like bring like tie things together, like Nash in the Street Fighter Alpha games, and then in Street Fighter V was Charlie in Japan. He's Nash here, right?
No,
Nash
it's the other Charlie way around.
Oh, sorry. And finally, they're just like, why don't we just say his name is Charlie Nash?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that works.
And have him played by Chris Klein in one of the most hilarious performances I've ever seen in my life.
Just unnecessary. Nash. Just so unnecessary.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You also pointed out the ending of Mega Man 7, sort of the odd game out of the Mega Man series that came out like after Mega Man X had already made a huge splash.
After like Mega Man X 2.
Say 7 kind of came out at, it was one of those games that came out toward the end of the console's lifespan also.
I never saw it. 95. I would have bought it. I mean, so it's in the PlayStation era.
I was not aware of it until much later when I started seeing those sprite comics with like the Super Nintendo Mega Man. And I think like the way that the US version especially was written is it was kind of a bit more sassy and gag focused than we were used to from Mega Man games. And then it had a couple of gags as opposed to almost none. And that kind of that attitude sort of bled over into the sprite comics, and that's how a lot of people got acquainted with the characters. But the ending script especially, where Mega Man threatens to kill Wily, and he like, you know, starts charging up his Mega Buster, and in the English version he's like, you know, Wily surrenders, he's like, I don't trust you, Wily, I'm gonna do what I should have done years ago. And Wily gets scared and backs up, and it's like, you forget, Mega Man, robots cannot harm humans. And then, like, in very slow...
Dick Jones!
In very slow, deliberate text...
I gotta understand that reference.
Mega Man says, I am more than a robot. Die, Wily!
Bubble lead.
But then, of course, you know, alarms go off and the base self-destructs or whatever. So Wily gets saved by base, and it sets up the confrontation at the beginning of Mega Man 8. Who cares?
You get a soccer ball in that game. It rules.
That's true. It does. But I think that's sort of tapping into, like, a lot of kids growing up, myself included, were like, why does he keep letting Wiley go? Why doesn't he just kill him? Mm. It's like, well, why does every superhero not murder his main villain? Like, come on.
I think, yeah, they tried, well, for Batman, I love they made it some, like, altruistic thing. Like, he did murder the Joker when they met. Mm-hmm. He just kept coming back. Yeah. I don't kill because we need to sell 8 of these a month.
Well, with Mega Man, so I rewatched the scene in both languages for this. Mm-hmm. And so, like, in the Japanese one, he's charging up his Buster as though he's going to kill Wily. And then Wily's like, you, a robot, would kill me, a human? And then he, like, stops charging and falls silent, like, Wily... Yeah. Like, called him out.
Just does
like,
the dot, dot, dot.
There. Yeah, it's just the dot, dot, dot.
And then a Proto-Man song kicks in. And Proto-Man song, my bad. Mm.
And I get, like, and you're kind of, it's kind of left open to interpretation, but, you know, in the years since, people have, there's been a lot of talk about how the difference between classic Mega Man and Mega Man X is free will.
Hmm.
And Mega Man cannot kill a human.
No, it's like one of the laws of robotics right there.
Right.
Yeah, only and robot so, gorillas. Mm-hmm. And
they probably, like, I can imagine you're bringing this over to the U.S. audience and you see him chicken out at the, like, at the, what looks like it's about to be the most satisfying moment after years of frustrating, you know, endings where Wily gets away somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And being like, well, that sucks. We got to do something about that. And so probably someone working in a total vacuum was probably like, I'll just make him say something more badass.
Yeah, it was way cool.
I would even bring up, perhaps conversely, not conversely, but like at that time in Super Nintendo development, we're about to have game ratings. Mega Man killing robots and beasties, that's all fine and good. Once you lay bullets into a human being and kill them, mm-hmm. you've crossed maybe some line. And at that time, Nintendo had kind of drawn a line in the sand. Not in 95, but like Mortal Kombat 2, I think the year earlier, they're like, fine, M-rated games. But that wasn't how it was probably when they started. Like, Mega Man's not supposed to kill humans. That's not a decree from Capcom. It's a decree from Nintendo. This will put your game in a different area.
Hmm.
Did that game have a rating? I feel like
no,
that it should have.
Yeah, nothing
but
on the. No.
But I mean, it's just Nintendo. I think what you're saying is it just would have fallen under Nintendo's blanket censorship policies.
Probably, yeah. Like, well, I mean, but like it as of now, this guy with a gun embedded with his arm is safe for preschoolers. Hmm. The second he kills a human being, we run into a weird area.
It's also not a very heroic thing in our culture, right. Like, yeah. To kill a guy, even if he's a bad guy, in cold
blood.
To shoot an
unarmed old man.
Yeah, no. It's just, you know.
They die of their own hubris, or Iron Man snapping his fingers, where he murdered thousands.
Although, we're totally okay throwing people off buildings, it
it's
seems.
True.
Like, if you want to get rid of a bad guy, falling death is kind of the only thing you're allowed to
but
do.
But usually they fall on their own accord because they're hanging on by one hand because they won't let go of the MacGuffin. And you're like, give me your other hand. And you're like, I'll never let you win, Christopher, man. And
although in Final Fight, you, like, punt the guy across the building in a wheelchair.
A handicap man, yes. It's great. Again, greatest game ever.
It's just funny to think about the ripples that flip decision to make him threaten to, you know, say, I am more than a robot and I will kill you.
Yeah.
It's like, it's very important to his character that we establish that he is not more than a robot. He is just a robot because this sets up Mega Man X.
He's a super fighting robot.
And this guy can't even remember his name half the time.
You must recover all the energy immediately, Mega Man.
But where is Dr. Wily?
That's a good question.
What was he going to say? What name was going to come out there with that W sound? Was he going to call him Wily?
What territory are we doing this for? Just Walkman or Mega Man?
As someone who has now done 2 fan dubs, I mean, granted, we have way better tools now, but they left in his mistakes.
Yeah,
official product.
They did.
It's like jazz.
That's a good question. I almost called you Rockman.
What
Mega
was your
Man.
Name again? I almost called you my cousin's name. You look a lot like him.
Need to find Andrew immediately, mommy. I'm Mega Man.
I remember I half jokingly when we were talking, Greg and I were working at Capcom, I half jokingly like, we should do a podcast and a segment should be Ask Dr. Wowie and I'll answer fan questions using this voice. And it wasn't serious and it like escalated to someone who needed to approve it. And they didn't say no. They were just like, Dr. Light is the one who sounds like that, not Dr. Wiley. Like, Jesus, like this can't, this shouldn't have gone this far in the first place. And this can't be why it dies. Dr. Wowie.
Jesus Christ.
R.Y.P. Joe Weberman.
Who definitely would not have been cool with Mega Man killing Wiley.
Not no, yeah, one of the reasons Mega Man eventually got raided.
Yep,
I will legislate this to the infinite powers of my abilities.
All right, let's move on.
Number two.
Aw, yeah.
What is this, Phantom of the Opera on the Master System?
Baseball, right. The best.
Oh!
I'm going to read some names to you.
Oh, no.
Eddie Gallagher, Jose Petrangelo.
Okay, I want to play a real quick fun game. As Michael's reading these, I want you to picture that appearing on the billboard of a club, either in Vegas or Atlantic City, whichever you live closer to. How many of these sound like lounge singers as Michael reads the names? Yeah. Go.
Doug Fernandez.
That's definitely one.
These all sound like boss characters, and I think you should leave.
Brian Incus.
One night only. Yeah. Brian Incus.
Greg Rung. Sean Furcote.
Ooh, he is a great new CBD strain.
Yeah. Mike Truck.
Mike Truck. Mike Truck is what the Japanese think all Americans should be named.
That's Mike Trout and John Kruk combined, isn't it?
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Probably. That's a sports joke, Chris and Michael. I understood.
I pretended to laugh.
Raul Chamberlain. and, of course, Todd Gonzalez, Sleeve McDykel, and Bobson Dugnut.
Sleeve McDykel is a great name for a magician.
That's what I'm saying. Opening for Blue Man Group.
He has extra large sleeves, but he never uses them.
So these are all, you're probably familiar with these on some level, because they've been memed half to death. But these are our player names from Fighting Baseball for the Super Famicom. That
Jerome Grid,
Jerome Grid,
Willie Dustis,
Tony Smerick, Salabanine.
There's just something so quaint about him that, like, in theory, separately, there's nothing too wrong about any of those surnames. Like, yeah, that could be a real surname in English, but
Brett Gutter.
That's what I'm saying, but like, there's just something slightly off about all those names. Like, well, yeah, none of those are names.
It's like many of them are just like, this would be a name except for one letter.
Yes.
That makes it hilarious.
Yes. Scott DeRoque.
Yeah, if this were a deliberate attempt to make fun of American names, it would be brilliant.
Yeah. But you could never make something.
And if
as
it was
funny
on purpose, it would be racist. But that's why it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so. I did not realize Fighting Baseball. So this is a rare case of U.S. to Japan weird localization.
Oh.
Because Fighting Baseball was originally released the year before in the U.S. as MLBPA Baseball by Visual Concepts based in Marin, California.
Which is, I love the fact that it's not MLB like the league, the teams, mm-hmm. No. Just the Players Association. So the game that was licensed by the actual MLB players, when it went to Japan, the players like, you don't have this license anymore, make names up.
Is it the people who made those great Sega sports games?
Yeah, Sega Sports and 2K Sports. This was originally EA Sports. It's in the game.
Wow.
Before they had that silly slogan.
That's a great slogan.
It's exactly the same if you look at the Japanese version, except that they take out, I guess they had like a licensed announcer who would appear before games.
Yeah, like, baby.
It, you know, not his voice, but his likeness and some
Dick
text.
Dick Vitale does not do baseball.
I bit a girl in the ass, baby. I'm confusing
different
my sports
guy,
announcer.
Different guy.
I overcame cancer, baby. The spicy McNuggets are back, baby.
All right.
So, yes. Transformed into fighting baseball. They didn't have the license to the player names or likenesses, obviously. So apparently what happened is the programmers just came up with a bunch of new names that they thought sounded American. And to be fair, they were pretty close with some of these, like Elvis Crushell. Like you could totally know a guy named Elvis Crushell.
Or Kevin Nogginly. It's an adverb for noggin.
Mike Zilchrist.
It's like, we totally deserve this. I just bought an old Looney Tunes collection. I assure you we deserve this.
Ooh. Kevin Mumminen, that's another one that I love.
Mumminen.
Mumminen. And Bill Putanto.
Man, I got to get out of the house and get some Putanto.
Putanto.
Oh, sorry. No, Bill Putanton.
Putanton.
Yeah, whole town of Putant.
Boil them, mash them, stick them in a stew. Putanton.
Tom Menwaring. That's also a good one.
Okay.
I love it.
Todd Willicams.
Willicams.
Hey. Look at the cams on this Willie guy.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Ooh, the cams on that one, huh?
Hey, they go all the way up. Are his pants see-through like the current MLB?
Anson Sweeney, Dean Wesry, Anatoly Smorin.
Smorin and Sweeney, attorneys at law.
Yeah, welcome, Smorin please. And Sweeney. Welcome to Smorin over California.
I'm so curious what the process was for coming up with these, because it does almost seem like they procedurally like scrambled real names.
Yeah.
But
Yes. It seems like they looked up some real names, mixed them up, and then replaced one letter. It's like one letter off horse shit. What's even funnier to me, it's the MLB Association, so real baseball players. There's not enough detail that they had to replace, like, any of the faces. Just get that mustache off Keith Hernandez, and we're good.
What does likeness mean in the 16-bit era?
These all look like white faces to me. The only detail is in their uniforms.
We don't have a lot of insight.
Has anyone played fighting baseball, though? Because, like, it's got a great name, and it implies there's actual fighting in there, which would be dope.
There is no actual fighting.
That's some bullshit. That is some. That could be the next EA Sports big game is like fighting baseball. Let's go.
Maybe I should like pick up Richard Grisham's book, because I did play a ton of sports games in the 8 and 16-bit era, and the baseball game had kind of been perfected. It was fascinating mapping the bases to your D-pad. Just perfect. Like, if you deviated from that, you overcomplicated the game. And they didn't... The only thing that stopped them from producing more baseball games was baseball's popularity and the MLB license. Because it was just an easy game for every single company to make.
Yep. Yeah. And then eventually Sony bought the license.
Locked it down.
Like, we got MLB now.
I remember in the PlayStation era, I was asking my sport. He was still playing like all the sports games. Like, what's the best baseball game? And he said, Triple Play Baseball. That's the last time I heard anybody say I prefer this baseball game, because you had no choice after that.
Yeah, no, it's weird how that genre. I mean, they definitely had innovation, but like, if you haven't played a baseball game since the NES days, you could pick one up now.
You think so?
Totally. Oh yeah. Like a lot of. They've mapped now base running. You typically can like tell all the runners to go on the shoulder button, so it's just kind of like, okay, hit the left shoulder button to make them go forward a base.
Wow, I have not played a baseball game since shoulder buttons.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but the other, like the pitching mechanic of just like, here's a you're looking from behind the pitcher's view. There is a box in front of the batter. You put where you want the thing to go. And now in the show, I think there's three, maybe four different methods of pitching and batting. Like they've taken the best of all those like triple play games. Like, okay, yeah, let's take all those systems. They're all in here now. So it's kind of like, well, how do you want to bat in your video baseball game? Yeah, we got that too. You know,
I want to hit only knuckleballs and learn what a knuckleball is.
Oh my God. Knuckleballs are so weird when you know the physics of a knuckleball.
I don't.
is a ball. So spinning the baseball is what causes the baseball to have curvature as you throw it, right? So the seams, literally the seams. I'm sorry if I'm going to get a little sciencey here.
Go for it.
The seams on a baseball are what cause curving patterns. So when you're throwing a fastball, for example, you make it spin a certain way, and the way you do that is you hold your hand on the ball a certain way.
You throw it like David Bowie in Labyrinth would throw a crystal.
It all depends on where you put your fingers on the seams of the ball and how you make that ball spin when it comes out of your hand. And if you make it spin a certain way, you're going to have a curveball which drops as it reaches the batter, right? Or kind of goes in like a curvature pattern. Like most fastballs have a little bit of break. There's a little bit of something there, but they're pretty straight for the most part. But the beauty of a knuckleball is its unpredictability. So a true knuckleball, the way you hold that ball, you're trying to take away as much spin as possible. So what that does is it makes the ball subject to the physics of the air, what's going on in the air around it. So as it heads toward the base and toward the catcher, it's just a completely unpredictable ball. And if there's anything going on with the atmosphere at that time, like wind and stuff, that ball's going to...
fucking bird. One of my only favorite baseball clip.
Oh, Randy Johnson blowing up the bird.
He exploded a bird.
Yeah. Oh. That's, I mean, the chances of that. So yeah. The knuckleball is, it's weird. And the reason it's not used that often is like, most of the time you're going to get lit up if you throw a ball like that, you know, but like, the guys who know how to throw it, like it's just an unpredictable pitch. I love it. And it's goofy. It's just a very goofy pitch.
Unpredictable pitch is a great Japanese baseball name.
Mm. Yeah.
Go outside, nerd.
Hey. Oh, I stepped right in that and it was meant for Matt.
No, that was for Matt.
Going back to fighting baseball / MLBPA baseball, there is, like, I noticed watching videos of it, like, there is a persistent background noise across both versions. It's like, I think it's supposed to be the crowd.
Yeah, it's a whistle, probably.
It's the whistling it's making the crowd this noise.
It sounds like they're saying, like, that has to hurt or last alert.
Oh, there were discernible words in there. Yeah. It wasn't just robble, robble, robble.
But that wasn't that possible at the time. That would have taken up so much memory on a cart.
Yeah, probably. You know,
yeah, but they could have fucked with actual voices and compressed them enough to get them in there.
Yeah, and I mean, if you just have one sample that you're playing at various speeds, that's not good.
It's probably Dick Vitale right there, slowed down and compressed.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what it sounds like is when you watch those Ghost Hunter shows and they're trying to pick up, pick up random signals.
Did you hear that?
He
definitely said heaven is real. Yeah, this Victorian ghost just said Swiss Army knife.
Yeah.
No, man. It's a real big stretch.
You're picking up some like 8-year-old's walkie-talkie feed from 3 miles away. What are you talking about?
Relax. There's interference on this podcast right now. It's not a ghost.
The ghost said something about Patriots buying food for the end times.
$400 gold
radio
shoes.
Signal.
Yeah. Fighting baseball.
Fighting baseball. Man, it's pretty great, but I think there's only one granddaddy.
Sleeve Red Rodrison. Another name I picked. Red Rodrison.
Let's knock out a few more of these before we'll move on.
Hey, I wanted a Red Rodrison, but my mom said I'd shoot my eye out. So
Scott Rodriguez.
They think Sleeve is a common American name.
Sleeve. Which I'm guessing is Steve.
Ryan Smith, R-Y-N-E, Ryan.
Well, the Ryan, there you go.
Ryan Sandberg was an actual
That's
player.
True. That's true.
Gary B. Shields, and the B and S in B. Shields are both capitalized. Bruce Schaub, Jeff Vanderwall.
That's close enough to a real name.
That was a great interactive episode of Black Mirror.
Danny Marrero.
Pat Dirk, Dwight Blavin, and Jose Every.
Well, that's what's funny is some of those they did, you can tell they combined actual baseball player names into these weird hybrid names. So that was probably like a combo of Dwight Gooden and Tom Glavin, who are real baseball players, create.
Who do you think Daryl Archibald is?
Okay, so probably Daryl Strawberry, and I don't know.
How about Sammy Nurker? Like, Nurker.
Scott Dork. Dork is spelled D-O-R-Q-U-E.
Go outside, Dork.
Mario McRaney.
Doesn't dork actually mean like a duck's butt? Like that's the literal definition of a dork.
Could be. Duck butt.
Anyway. Frank Fazolish. You know,
yeah, sorry.
Technically, this counts as localization, guys.
Technically.
I just want people to understand that.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to our...
What happened? Someone set up Azkaban. We get signal.
What?
Main screen turn on.
It's you.
How are you, gentlemen? All your base are belong to us.
Yeah.
You are on the way to destruction.
What you say?
You have no chance to survive. Make your time. Ha ha ha.
That is, of course, the lead into Invasion of the Gabba Robots, All Your Baser Belong to Us, which built off of a popular meme from the early 2000s where someone discovered a... remember it was the late 90s, actually. Somebody discovered a copy of Zero Wing, which that is the European translation of the Mega Drive version of Zero Wing, which the arcade version does not have any cutscenes. They added a cutscene for the home conversion.
Which is quite good.
Yeah.
Like, the presentation is very good.
As shmups go, it's quite a good shooter. Like, if you like, you know, games like Gradius and...
we used to.
Darius, I've heard it's actually pronounced, which makes no sense to me.
I sing solo now, but I used to sing for Hootie and the Blowhoofer.
Cheddar Bacon Ranch is the best sandwich in the world.
Yes. I only want to be with you.
Hootie, Hootie.
Yeah, this was the one that like I was like, well, this has got to be the most famous example. I learned about this thing from You're the Man Now, Dog.
Oh, yeah,
this
of course.
Was so well, many
that's
memes had this.
The one bit of prop. But wait, the game has no voice acting.
Right.
So that's added in.
That is somebody just putting a weird computer generated voice.
Is that
voice
the people who made the song?
I believe so.
It's usually paired
with the song.
When I think about how I discover this, and we laughed for I think weeks in a very memeless world, all of us laughed at this, and it was somehow. I think it translated a little better to people who didn't even know games. Like, look at this mistranslation and saying these things out loud. Mm-hmm. This predates YouTube.
Yeah.
It was a
GIF in the early 2000s.
This predates editing software. Like, when I try and think about, how did you even make this? it seems so easy now. Like, anybody could do this on their phones. But this would be hard to do with the first Adobe fucking Premiere.
It wasn't that early. Like, we'd had iMovie and shit in the late 90s. So
Well, you Mac people did.
Exactly.
Weirdos.
But I'm just saying,
I still
movie
find
editing
it astonishing.
Software existed.
Because I don't think the internet, other than like I saw a bunch of, not Star Wars fan films, but people, they can add lightsabers onto these swords and gladiator kind of shit. This is the most like elaborate original video that I watched over and over again on the internet.
This was probably around the same time as Star Wars Kid, right?
This is like years before that.
Was this way before?
Not way before, but it felt like it, just because I was... in my early 20s, but this was before that, because I didn't watch this on a QuickTime player. I watched this on whatever Flash website it was on.
I watched it on You're the Man Now, Dog, because it popped up all the time in, you know, a bunch of hybrid memes.
I believe 302010, Diana found that the definitive date YTMND started, and it is like 20 years ago almost to the day.
Damn.
Wow.
But yeah, it spread all over the place, and the rest of that scene goes on to like the captain... making the decision to move Zig, take off every Zig for great justice.
For great justice.
You know what you're doing.
It's still screamed in a lot of online games.
Yeah. For great justice.
For great justice. Hysterical. I've never bothered to actually play this. But
I mean, it sounds like this.
Fucking great.
This could have been the Rockman soundtrack.
Yeah. So that music is in the Invasion of the Gabba Robots song that got super popular, but that's just like the first level.
That should have been the name for the Yo Gabba Gabba movie, Invasion of the Gabba.
Here's a weird thing. I think this got... Did this get re-released on like the Wii Virtual Console or something?
Maybe.
I think so. Well, it did recently get re-released on GOG, and mm-hmm. I believe that version has like an overhauled, like new graphics, new text intro. But they left the weird English for
I was going to say, if you fix that, you misunderstand the point.
They fix the captain and the ensign, or the communications officer who says main screen turned on. But how are you, gentlemen? All your Basar belong to us. Of course, that's still preserved. And if you're hoping for some sort of resolution to this screen, like who is this mysterious cat's cyborg guy who shows up and says all this weird shit, you will never get it. Because that game has one other cutscene at the very end, and it is just your ship being pulled up into a mothership, and they rocket off, and then a weird chicken-potato hybrid runs up into the foreground, puffs out its cheeks, winks and smiles, and then just stares into the camera for like 10 seconds. And that's it. What? That's the game.
Is that thing in the game anywhere else?
Not that I know of. Like, it's a pretty straightforward space shooter up until that point.
Look at that today. I thought they were pulling a Men in Black ending. I thought the big creature ate the ship as it was flying off imply like this giant, we're all living in the world of these giant alien creatures.
No, he's just trying to wipe your memory of it.
Mm-hmm. It's like in Alesta, also in the Genesis. They introduce like your whole like motley crew of like fellow pilots, and then in the first 5 seconds they all get lasered from space.
Hell yeah.
Isn't Alesta the stuff that gave everyone anal leakage in those potato chips years ago? Oh, Alestra. My bad. Yeah.
It was Alestra 20 years ago. Today, for me, it's everything.
Yeah, I think that's one of the fighting baseball players.
Mm-hmm. Bug Alestra.
Anal leakage.
Can you imagine the first conversation where people kind of discovered that wasn't just them reacting to that? Like, hey, did any of you guys just shit yourself and not feel it after eating these chips last night? Oh, thank God. I thought it was just me. Like, what?
I actually, like, I ate a whole bag of them with friends. trying to get anal leakage.
On a dare?
But my diet was so bad, it had no effect. Are you kidding? Like, I'm stealing Taco Bell food. Like, this isn't going to have any effect on me at all. I think it was just for, like, weirdo normies who still cook their own vegetables. Fucking weirdos.
Yeah, fucking weirdos.
Sorry to get us so off track of this very important video game.
If we're talking about anal seepage at this point.
It's Zero Wing. I was just thinking, like, I haven't played it, but if I walked into a retro game store... Who cares? Is that Zero Wing? I will buy Zero Wing.
I'd buy Phalanx or whatever just for the cover at this point. Like, meme games are awesome. You know?
Yeah, it's like this game has brought me so much more happiness than a game I've actually played.
Here's the question. Do you guys prefer Jimi Hendrix's version or Stevie Ray Vaughan's version of Zero Wing? That is a bad music joke. Greg,
I didn't get that at all. Greg might get it.
You even lost me on that one. I'm sorry.
They both play a song called Little Wing.
Not to be confused with Ken's theme, Mighty Wing.
Looks like that what that's called?
Original copies of Zero Wing are going for between $115 and $250.
Wow. I mean, it wasn't popular. Yeah. There was a time I could have swung that, Greg. Quit fucking rubbing it in my face that I can't afford Zero Wing.
The Genesis market is just like that now. But actually, they did re-release it on cartridge.
Limited run.
That sounds like a limited run type thing.
Yeah, it's probably as expensive now.
Hmm.
But I want to believe.
But obviously if this meme came out 10 years later, it wouldn't have been as popular. But somebody should have capitalized on this. There was a fucking Bubsy game like 4 years ago.
I think the best part for me about the meme is the meme came out years after the game. It wasn't like this was a common game we all knew about. And it's like, hey, remember that bad translation? It's like, Hey, I found this sort of weird relic of the early 90s. Check this shit out. This is hilarious, you know?
Yeah.
And so...
I'm just gonna read directly from Wikipedia here. The first references of the meme could be seen in 1999 and the early 2000s when an animated GIF of the scene appeared on forums and sites like Zany Video Game Quotes, Overclocked, and Tribal War Forums. In November 2000, Kansas City computer programmer and part-time disc jockey Jeffrey Ray Roberts of the Gabber band The Laziest Men on Mars made a techno dance track, Invasion of the Gabber Robots, which remixed some of the Zero Wing video game music with a voiceover the phrase, "All your bass are belong to us."
Which I loved. It's still I could still get it in my head if I had to listen to it, so don't play it.
I mean, the computer voice he uses does sound like my Speak and Spell come to life.
Oh,
like,
yeah, really I guess it does.
Just,
or it's very early. If you guys ever played around, like, very early computer text-to-speech stuff, like, in the 90s and before, like, it all sounded like War Games. It
like
was just like
that Reading Rainbow episode of, like, "Hello, my name is Mark."
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Don't know it, but I can't wait to Google it later.
All right. Well, that has been our top five about weird localization decisions. Hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. We're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about some new releases, new smaller stuff. Stay tuned.
All your bass, 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 all your bass,
let's get scratching.
Would you like exclusive bonus podcast commentaries and more from the LaserTime crew? Then we strongly encourage you to support this show on patreon.com/lasertime. It supports not only this show, but all the rest of the LaserTime Network. You'll get commentaries, play games with the hosts, see exclusive videos first, and receive an uncut weekly ad-free podcast bonus time. Speaking of which, here's a quick taste.
We are going to be talking about the film from 1984 that I've watched the most number of times.
Oh.
No other film in 1984 have I watched and rewatched as many times as this film.
Not even Paris, Texas?
Not even Barton Fink?
Nope.
I think I'm sort of with you on this, because it's just one of my earliest memories. And I think, given our ages, 1984, I'm not asking to watch any movies. I don't know any movies exist, really. I have to be brought to one, or it has to be shown to me. And I think I have really specific memories of this was just brought to school.
Yeah.
I would have been 4 when the movie came out, so I think there's no way I'm in the theater, because it's Neverending Story is not a huge hit.
Yeah, listeners, we are talking about the 1984 film The Neverending Story.
Get Bonus Time, a weekly uncensored and commercial-free podcast every Tuesday, starting for just $5 on patreon.com/lasertime.
And welcome back to our second segment, where we're going to leap headlong into that morass of fun.
He said, she said bullshit.
That too, an R.
I think you better quit talking that shit.
I'll leave you with a fair lip.
Segment. not a whole lot going on this week. Freedom Planet 2 is coming to consoles. If you haven't played it, I mean, it's pretty good if you like, you know,
it is
Sonic the Hedgehog inspired fan
games. I love Freedom Planet. I feel like it's the dream of, like, if the 32X or the Saturn had kept going and kept making awesome 2D games,
go on.
That's what you get.
But you're not a fan of 2?
No, I am. No, I said sick. Sick is a good thing.
I just heard his. I thought you were making the
Yeah,
no, noise.
I said sick.
But no, it's cool because it has, you know, it expands the roster of playable characters from 2 to 4. There's now like a kung fu floating puppy girl and like a panda with a spear who has like a bunch of melee combat things that she can do. And you also have the dragon and the cat on the motorcycle from the first game. And yeah, you can just start a campaign, play through these gigantic, beautifully detailed levels. In a, you know, quasi 16/32-bit style. It's a lot of fun if you're into that.
I feel like these games never come up, but like, when I first saw the trailer for Freedom Planet 1, I was like, if I were in charge of the world, this would be the top story in every game. it looked so good, and then I played it, and it was so good.
I streamed the shit of the first one. Like, so it's, I love the first one. I have not played the second. Maybe I did play the second. The second one's been out for a couple of years, right?
Second one's been out on Steam since 2022. So,
okay. Maybe I haven't.
I remember that they added more, like, hang out in town and chat with characters stuff.
Oh, yeah! The Sonic trajectory.
Isn't my cup of tea, but the levels themselves are as good as the first game, as I recall. So, like, yeah. Definitely worth checking out.
Lots of really cool stuff.
Brian Fellows, Freedom Planet.
Physics stuff to negotiate with. Also, I'm
Brian Fellows.
The Stellar Blade demo came to PS5 and caused a weird controversy on social media where
Twitter.
Twitter specifically.
No one else is talking about it.
there are a bunch of dudes who are using this as a springboard for, like, this shows, you know, everything wrong with Western game design, and we're going back to tradition. And the tradition they're talking about is sexy girl ass.
As if that's not in, like, every other Japanese game.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a lot more bouncy and shiny here, so...
It's also in every other Western game. It's not like it's...
No, every Western game is Aloy and Ellie and... women they consider ugly.
Who they think are ugly because they haven't seen actual women.
Yes.
None of these women... All these women in person are so pretty. They wouldn't spit on your balls if they were on fire. And I think all those assholes missed the point of whatever that movement was. Objectification shouldn't be illegal. No one was saying that. It just shouldn't be the default. And it shouldn't be the default. If like this, it's a Batman cartoon for kids, and Harley Quinn has two ass cracks. Like, why does this need to be so sexy? This is a kid show. What? Yes, those are perfectly reasonable questions to ask, but of course you can have an M-rated game with a big ass in it. Who gives a shit? It happens all the time.
I need to stop things just for safety purposes. If Chris awakened anything in you, please don't set your balls on fire to have someone spit on them. Okay,
don't look up Harley Quinn two ass cracks.
I hope that giant broad from Resident Evil is the one who spits on your nuts and you drown in it. But I played this and it just like one. It's like. I really liked it.
Yeah.
But it's like...
It's fine.
Are you going to pretend? You just didn't play Bayonetta, you asshole. Mm, you didn't play Bayonetta 3, all of you. None of you played Bayonetta 3. This is mildly Dark Souls meets Bayonetta.
Yeah, meets a Nier Automata. It kind of has those vibes.
Sexiness is kind of baked into this whole subgenre, you know? Like, the whole... It's all, like... self-indulgent action. You're supposed to like look awesome and it's supposed to feel really slick and awesome and you know, you should kind of feel like a sports car with a sword.
Yeah.
And that's what I think. Like, I
once
think
again, apologize if we awaken anything in you with that.
Don't look up sports car with a sword.
Wrong with Western design. I'm like, this is from Korea. This is a weird mishmash of Western and Eastern design. Because that design isn't quite Japanese, in my opinion. I can't put my finger on it, but some of it is lack of polish. But like, it's super pretty, and the combat is dope, and it makes knights noises when you pick up stuff. I don't know if I love the pickup mechanic. The idea
you have to actually hit a button over the tiny.
It's super tiny. They're not even as like glowing. It's like a quarter of the size of what Souls would be.
There's only so much memory. Her ass takes up all that memory.
It's true. It's refracting so much light for some reason.
It's
so shiny.
No room for UI. Yeah,
you never saw asses this big during the ROM shortage. They had to.
We had to scale back and economize our asses in those days.
That's why Rogue wasn't in Children of the Atom. Couldn't put her there. But I thought this was very good. It shouldn't be controversial in the slightest.
No.
I played several dozen games like this, and I guess these idiots haven't.
Well, it's kind of unfortunate that that whole thing is maybe overshadowing some of the game's reputation.
Only if you're on Twitter, which none of us are, so we don't know what you're talking about.
Well, lucky you. Good. yeah. I'm sure someone listening to us does and is probably getting furious at me right now and is writing a screed about my anti-gamer stance.
Why? You said you liked it.
That's true. I have said I liked it. No, it's fine. Like I said, it's just it's a shame that this controversy or non-troversy, however you want to describe it, is overshadowing and coloring people's perception of this game, which, like, yeah, there's nothing wrong with this.
I wish it was a little more Soulsy, but I like that it's doing different things. And one of the things I wanted to shake the Souls universe by the shoulders of, like, why does everything need to be gray brown castles from the mind of Hewlett-Packard Lovecraft? Why can't we be in the future? Please, please, can we be in the future? And we are. And the combat's kind of incredible. The traversal, not so much. Mm-hmm. But it's super fucking pretty. And the music is amazing. And everything you collect, if you can get five things, I think Sega should sue. It makes Knights noises.
Excuse me.
Sure.
What?
Okay.
It makes Knights noises.
Contacting legal. Contacting legal now.
Get on that.
Yeah, tell me more things like that, because every time I hear it compared to Souls, my interest wanes a little bit.
I mean, the campfire thing is like almost ridiculous. There's a literal lawn chair and a vending machine instead of a campfire.
Yeah, this is a
it
safe
almost doesn't
place
need to
now.
Be there.
And a record player for some reason. And yeah, that's another thing. The soundtrack. One of the reasons I invoke Nier Automata is that. The soundtrack is like mostly voiced music, which is a little bit rare because it can be distracting. But, you know, it's that sort of ethereal singing that like defines a lot of exploration in the Nier games.
Which means it could hypothetically never appear as the hypothetical background music on a certain hypothetical video game podcast that you may or may not be listening
yes,
to right
this
now.
One.
And it's very
hypothetical.
I believe right before we recorded, I just got to the ability where you can, you know, like Dark Souls, level up some of your passive elements, but like it's more like this massive fucking skill grid, and you can not only try out like just one button instantly on an SSD train in that with that skill, you can train in skills you're miles away from unlocking. Mm-hmm. And see what you might want to unlock in the future. I just wish more games did that.
Yeah, I'm really starting to get over the whole skill tree thing of just like, well, it's okay. So I love this game, so not to knock it, but like in Rebirth, it's more the illusion of choice. They have like kind of that skill system with the synergies and stuff of like, well, there's only a few places I can go at this point. It's not a.
This does.
Well, like, there's a little bit of that, but also, like, okay, with the points I have now, yeah, I guess I could just go down one path, but then things start to get so expensive, it's like, oh, I guess I just have to start opening up other things on these other paths. I'd much rather have it just be like, look, here's a huge thing of skills. Maybe they're more like nodes of like, yeah, go explore in this node for a bit, go explore in this one, but none of this, like, fake bullshit choice skill, like, kind of pick one of three paths, and then you're just going to keep investing in that path.
Yeah, like, and you have to Google what every one of them does. What should I end up building towards? I thought that was really cool, and more games should take that. Like, you can play your final skill. Try it out and see if it's worth working towards.
Real quick, I know it's a light week for new releases, so can we... Greg, I don't know if you've played it, but I know you, as a war-scarred Capcom vet... lived through the Dragon's Dogma years. And can we get Greg's thoughts on Dragon's Dogma 2?
Yeah, I have played it, and, you know, I've been playing a lot less games in general over the last, I don't know, 9 months. So I kind of came out of hibernation for this one, because Dragon's Dogma, up until Street Fighter VI came out, Dragon's Dogma was my most played game ever. And it's the one game that my wife and I both like. She only likes that in Zelda. So, like, not that much of a gamer in general. But, like, that was the one game that we, like, bonded over, you know? And I had, you know, I don't have, like, a ton of hours, but, like, probably 250 or something in the first game. And I played through it, I think, like, twice each on PS3 and PS4. You know, I think, like probably a lot of players, I had sort of a short list of things that I hoped they would one do in a sequel if they ever did a sequel. And I think my wife had a similar list. And when they announced the game, I was tentatively excited because I have a lot of faith in Itsuno's team, and I was a huge fan of what they did with Devil May Cry 5. I thought it was a tremendous, you know, level up. Like, it felt simultaneously like it was still in the spirit of the PS2 games, but also like a huge upgrade from DMC4 especially. So it's like, man, they've got the RE engine now. That thing is black magic. Like, it's running these games that look better than any other, you know, game out there, and it's running them better than any other game out there. So, and then there were like moments in DMC5 that looked like stuff out of Dragon's Dogma: Dark Arisen, you know, like the settings. It was like, oh man, if they make another Dogma, it's gonna look like this. But then they started showing Dogma 2 in trailers and stuff, and I was like, man, it really looks a lot like the 2012 game. not that it looked bad, it just didn't look as better as I was expecting.
Talk about shades of brown everywhere, Chris.
It was like a lot of green and brown still, and just like not the facelift I expected them to put forward. But now it's out, and we have about 25 hours in it so far. We've sort of been tag teaming it, playing as a thief, and our impressions so far are very not good.
Oh wow, really?
Yeah. It just feel like I keep trying to understand what was the guiding like philosophy behind it, because they basically didn't do any of the stuff that either of us would have liked for them to do.
What was on your list? Yeah, can you tell us what was on your wish
list? Okay, so like the biggest one, but the one that I also thought was kind of a toss up was co-op. Because I never really bought the rationale that like they wanted it to be centered around this pawn system, because the pawns are just dumb co-op buddies. It's like playing co-op with someone who's stupid and irrational.
It's a palico in Monster Hunter.
And in every case, if you replace the pawn with a player that you could talk to like a human, it would just be more fun and better. I still think that. And like the pawn, like there's charm. There's a lot of like accidental charm to Dogma 1 and probably also Dogma 2 that is like the charm people get. You ever heard of the term Xtolge? Xtolge, it's like a shit game.
That shit is so gay.
It's got a lot of like Xtolge vibes. And I think that comes through especially with the pawns, because they're constantly saying and doing stupid things, but it's like charming and funny, and that's like where the emergent gameplay comes from, is the pawns like saying a dumb thing at just the right time to make you laugh. I feel like there's a lot of contrived, so this is another thing on my wish list, is that there were a lot of like contrived moments in the first game that were supposed to look like emergent gameplay, but were actually like stuff that they coded in. Like, there was a specific ledge with a specific Cyclops on it, and if you attack him a bunch, he'll sidestep off the ledge and fall to his death. And it's like, oh man, what a moment! But that, like, he always does that, and it's just that one time, you know.
So I suspected those clips going around about the sequel were scripted.
Yeah, like the Cyclops, like creating a bridge because he falls over the gorge, you know, and like grabs to the other side. It's like that's that'll be like delightful when it happens, but it's not the same thing as an emergent moment, which is like the thing that draws people to sandbox games in the first place. It's a contrived thing, and it's more like it's like an enemy behavior. It's like learning his moveset. You also learn that he can sometimes make a bridge, and that's its own feature, but it's not the same thing.
And he like sits there forever. He's like, you know, it'd be great as if you walked across my back right now.
Yeah, like it just feels, and like if that happens, even twice, like when it's a surprise, the first time something like that happens, it'll be like, ah, very good. If it happens even twice, it's lame. And also the fact that they're like, just like, so another thing on the wish list was just like more new monsters, you know, like when they released the Dark Arisen expansion, that was like the big draw, was there was like a crap load more monsters. And it was, that's basically what it was. It was a dungeon with new monsters. And, like, it feels like... I'm not that far in yet, but it feels like I'm just seeing the same, like...
You like wolves?
We got wolves. Four or five, you know, like, a griffin again, a cyclops again. There's the minotaur who's kind of just, like, fighting a cyclops. I mean, it's not exactly the same, but... So we've been pretty underwhelmed. And then the other thing is the vocations. Like, I was kind of hoping there'd be like a lot of new cool vocations, and I haven't tried anything but thief yet. But thief just right away felt like half a strider from the first game, because you don't have the bow. They specialize the vocations more, and I understand, because it was a little weird with the first game where there was a lot of overlap with the vocations, and so they kind of bled together. You know, it's like, okay, well, you can use a bow with like five of these, and like you can be a magic archer who doesn't even use a bow at all if you want. So I, you know, it kind of makes sense to specialize them, but I don't feel like they like justified it very well, at least with the thief, because it really just feels like you cut a strider in half, and then you don't even get, like, you only have four skill slots and you used to have eight. It's hard to see that as anything but a nerf, you know. And just other things that I was hoping they would address is like just discovery in the world being more compelling. You know, sometimes you'd stumble across a cool thing in the world, but you'd be locked out of it because you hadn't initiated the quest. Quest design and like just the way things are tied together was kind of janky, and it still is. You know, like you'll initiate stuff without understanding how or why, or you know, like something that happened on like one of our first sessions was like, we were looking for a specific guy in this pub, and we'd just be like standing there, like looking at a fac or something, trying to figure out what to do. And we'd just be standing still, and all of a sudden we'd get rushed by like 20 villagers, and they would just like beat the crap out of us. It was just like, it was just like, what triggered that? I don't know. And it kept happening. I kept getting arrested.
We don't take kind of the Sis Gregs around these parts.
I got arrested a bunch of times in a row, and every time breaking out of jail just consisted of me using a jail key that they let me keep, you know? And it was just like, it's just completely nonsensical. And then like, quests, like, you would go, you'd have a pawn that had prior knowledge of a quest because they, like, someone borrowed them and used that them for that quest. And it, like, they just, like, so that you can follow your pawn to the destination now, which is kind of cool, except most of the time you have a waypoint anyway, so it's not that helpful. And then also what happens is sometimes instead of a waypoint, you just have, like, a radius, like, go to this radius and then search for a specific needle in a haystack.
I hate those.
And when that happens and you have a pawn with quest knowledge, they'll just continually tell you to follow them to, like, the center of that radius. So the player experience is you get to the radius, and then you're, like, looking for a specific person of note. And meanwhile, you've got this pawn going, follow me! And it's like, okay, I'll follow you. And he just takes you back to the center of town or something. It's like, no, I'm already in the radius. I need to find the guy.
And okay, it wasn't just me. I had something similar happen where I was following a guy on a quest. This was an NPC, though, not one of the pawns. And he's like, follow me. I'm like, all right, follow you. So we go around. He took me in a complete circle back to the starting point of the quest, because you could tell it sort of bugged out. Like, we went down this one path, maybe we weren't supposed to. I'm like, this all seems familiar, and then went on that circle again, and then it course corrected. I'm like, wait, did they do that? Is this like the cab driver who's trying to get a better fare, so he goes in a few circles and praying you're drunk enough not to notice? Like, what just happened here?
Yeah, there's a lot of that. There's a lot of, like, I don't know what's happening or why, or like my pawn, like one of the pawns says something over my shoulder, and I don't know like what he's referring. Like, there's a treasure chest, and like, I don't know where he's looking. I don't know where he's indicating.
It puts it on your map, though, doesn't it? When they spot him, it puts it on your map.
That may be, and I just didn't notice. That is possible. Okay.
That's what's been happening to me so far. But a lot of them are still unreachable, because it's like, okay, it's up on that cliff. I've just walked around the cliff. There's no ladders.
The cumulative effect of all this is I've just been conditioned to ignore the pawns most of the time. And the other thing is there were times where they'll be like, "Oh, it seems we need to go to blah blah blah. We're not far from there." And I'll look at my map and be like, "No, we are. We're there. That's where we are now." The thing that the pawn said makes me feel like we're not there yet. And so because I doubted the pawn and checked the map, I realized that the pawn is just like bullshit.
Pick him up, throw him off the nearest cliff.
It's selling like crazy. Do you think they're going to treat it sort of life service-y like the first one and update it and fix some of this stuff though?
No, I think they might try and so the other thing is that the game also runs really badly on my PC, and PC's a few years old, but it's literally the only game I've ever put on that thing that doesn't run at least 60 FPS, including Elden Ring. So it just really feels like not an upgrade. It feels like a slight downgrade, and everything is...
I think that's what Jarrett said. It was just like a redo of the first game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With a lot of things unaddressed.
Isono-san is very... all of his favorite games, I think, are from the late 80s. The late 80s or mid 80s. And I think probably... He's been trying to recreate the experience of playing an RPG on a PC in 1986. And so I think to an extent he wanted this game to be kind of unfackable, random stuff happens. And
That's what I'm called on Scottish dating sites, by the way. That guy's unfackable.
She's unfackable.
I was waiting for something like that.
Unfackable. She's got bread bones and bird teeth. She's unfuckable.
But it is kind of cool when you set out on a quest. You never really know what's going to happen. But these things go on and on for hours. If you lose your tent, you're screwed. And the fast travel thing is another thing. For Dark Arisen, they made fast travel easier, and now it's harder again. And I just feel like that. I don't know. That serves the specific vision that Itsuno had.
I'm sensing the expanded version. This is Dragon's Dogma 2, Darker Arisen, coming in hot.
I love that, actually, because I just feel like the open world was never where Dogma shined, and the dungeons were where it did. So bigger, more sprawled out open world was not... a compelling direction to take it, but I think he's very particular about his visions, and he's very resistant to modernizing. You can see it in Devil May Cry 5 too. The way that game modernized was very slight and subtle.
Fair enough. I feel like we've now gotten a pretty definitive take on Dragon's Dogma 2 from two different people.
Yeah, I watched Stephanie Sterling's review where she fucking hated it, but based that, the biggest complaint was, there's so much backtracking in this game. It's just walking back and forth for, 20 minutes across the same paths where the same enemies will spawn, and there's often no real reason to do it. Because fast travel is prohibitively expensive.
I will say this. It's an extremely extravagant, expensive, homage to very old school school of design, and I think it's kind of cool that Capcom allowed that, and it seems bizarre Itsuno-san is he's built up enough clout in the company where they kind of just let him do what he wants to do, and I hope that they continue to do stuff like that with their money. Dragon's Dogma, I don't think people understand. People talk about Dragon's Dogma 1 like it's like this cult hit. Dragon's Dogma 1 was the most expensive game Capcom ever made in its time. That was a huge risk, a huge venture for them. They were trying to be Skyrim, and they ended up being the most Capcom game ever. it's
what if Monster Hunter was much weirder?
And so I think this time they kind of leaned into letting him do what he wanted with it. Which is probably not what most people would want. And in principle, I like that they allow that kind of creative freedom, although I don't like this game very much.
Fair enough.
Fair enough.
Well, play Helldivers.
Yeah. Let's move along into...
All right, fellas, I don't want to hold you in recording this podcast any longer because we all have to go and dedicate 60% of our playtime to six-year-old or older games, which is according to new data published, let's see, was this Newzoo? Yeah, Newzoo released one of their second annual game industry reports, the story as covered by Kotaku. It talks about like the fact that a majority of playtime right now is being taken up by kind of four or five games. So they listed here, it's like Fortnite, GTA, which I'm presuming is GTA 5 Online or GTA Online, I guess. Call of Duty and Roblox. And then they talk about when it's not one of those like older games. A lot of the other time is taken up by sort of like recurring annual franchises like the NBA 2K games that come out every year or the FIFA that comes out every year. And so it's something like...
All games we don't talk about in the show?
Well, that's yes. What's wild, and I want to get there. But like it's like 23% of playtime, of all video game playtime in 2023, is spent on new games. That's it. That's games defined 2 years or younger, by the way.
That's awful.
So, like...
Well, I don't know.
The reason I bring it up is if you listen to this show, and we're very thankful if you do, by the way, but like...
Especially if you're listening to this point.
We are a particular type of gamer of a particular age, and we cover games even. And I think it's fair to say a lot of traditional games media has covered games much in the same way we do, which is... We get hype about big new releases, primarily single-player story-based releases. We play those things. We give you our take on them. But it's like there's – I've felt it. I don't know if you guys have, but like there is a big disconnect from how we think of and cover games from like what actually the – if you talk about the games industry at large, what's actually happening and going on there. Like in terms of like playtime, players, we've talked about on the show before like – So many people are playing Grand Theft Auto Online that we never talk about it.
We didn't talk about the Cluckin' Bell assault heist that is happening right now.
So it's like...
I'm not kidding. It is really
a thing. No, I know. That's a thing.
We have slowly become this sort of like old head niche in games and type of player of like, yeah, we look forward to the new stuff and we get a lot of joy. I think it's fair to say all of us. Maybe not you, Greg. You like older games, but
oh, yeah.
But like we that's what one of my favorite things is to look forward to a new game, play a new game, talk about that new game with my friends when it comes out. Right? Like I have played games for longer spans of time. Like I was into WoW back in the day and stuff. But like to me personally, I couldn't imagine just being like, yeah, you know what I play is just Fortnite. That's all.
No, I think we're probably due for a recalibration. Because even though I've liked
you mean the game market, not this podcast necessarily.
Well, yeah, no, not at all. Because like Game Pass
we're not
has been
change.
Super entertaining for this podcast, and the idea of like this little indie that came out, I cannot put it down. I can't put down a Hades or something like that. That's great, but like. An 80-hour narrative experience that costs you $300 million, there's a lot of times where, like, I get it, and I put it down immediately. And had I paid for that game, I probably wouldn't be very satisfied.
Well, and if you, like, track achievements and stuff at all, like, you will see that, like, very few people are getting very far in the majority of games.
I forgot what I was playing. I was playing a single-player game and, like, I am not the best at this, but I just have unlocked an achievement that 0.007 people... Like, I'm not an elite gamer. Like, people aren't doing this.
Yeah, and they. You know what's even sadder? So I read you that stat about, like, it's 23% are 2 years old or newer games. Only 8% of video game playtime was spent on new non-annual titles. So, like, Diablo 4, that's not annual. Like, it is a sequel, right. But it's funny because then they both of these examples are sequels. So, Baldur's Gate 3 and Diablo 4. Only 8% of all video game time. And yet, if you look at, like, well, what gets covered in, like, the Game Awards or what gets talked about on IGN and stuff on a regular basis. So, really, that stuff that we think of as gaming is kind of between 8 and 23% of what people are actually playing. This is on console, by
the way. I screenshotted a thing because I fucking hate Reddit, but Google is not good anymore. You kind of got to search Reddit if you want an answer. Mm-hmm. And I meant to send it to you, and like I put down Reddit's gaming menu of like, these are the top games.
Yeah.
Valheim. This is not alphabetical.
Yeah, okay.
Genshin Impact, Minecraft, Pokimane, not Pokemon, Halo Infinite, Call of Duty Warzone, Path of Exile, Hollow Knight Silksong, Escape from Tarkov, and Watchdog Legion. That is the thing Reddit last week seemed to think everybody was playing. And I was that seems weird.
Isn't Pokimane an influencer?
Pokimane is a person.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like if you just go to Twitch and look at the top games, that list will occasionally have a new game poke its head up there in the top 10 like every once in a while, and then almost always it'll fall out, and it's just the same 10 games week after week in that list. And that's why these stats weren't that surprising. I'm like, if you think of the normies, and maybe not the hardcore game fans that follow game news and listen to shows
or kids. I think kids have to factor into
kids
like
is a big part of it too.
A year or two ago, I was dating a girl, and like this 13-year-old No Man's Sky, years after release, him and 20 of his friends every day, No Man's Sky. Yeah, not paying them a cent, by the way. they picked it up on sale, all playing it.
And that's what's wild is like there are a lot of companies that have figured out how to make money off of these games. So even games like Minecraft, which originally started, you pay $30 and then that's it, and has since become this live service game that you can pay for up front on places like Switch or mobile or whatever, but most people are probably playing on Game Pass, or I'd say a big chunk. And so you get it for quote unquote free. They have all kinds of monetization hooks in that game. Roblox is like, that's free to download. You get access to a million different games.
That is the most played game in the world right now, Roblox. Yeah.
Hmm. And take it from someone who has kids. Like, that's what they want to play. Like, that's what they want to spend their gaming time and money on. They want Robux. They don't...
The way kids experience everything, I can't really imagine. I imagine it's harder, like, kids Matt's age. Like, daddy, I need this thing. Like, I'm not you. How would they be used to begging you to do a thing? If they have Roblox or Minecraft, like, this is just giving me new stuff. I don't have to ask you for anything. Mm-hmm. I don't have to mow the lawn. I'm not saying like
updated with.
Yeah, I'm not saying things. Kids aren't working, but like, if you kept updating Mario 64, I might not have cared, but I can like speedrun that game and like 10 hours and I did it over and over again and I wanted something new and it didn't have anything new for me.
Like I was talking to you guys earlier about how they're being conditioned to expect different things from games, whereas like we grew up like all games shipped complete, and once you were done with them, like, well, you'd better either find new ways to have fun or move on to something new if you wanted any sort of novelty.
I'm only baffled that these are like all 10-year-old games, because there was a like, once Warner Brothers got a hold of the Minecraft formula, they should have beat it. But, like, they haven't done that. Disney Infinity didn't do that. They weren't. None of them were able to, like, attack this small throne.
It's related to, I think it's related to, there was a story, so Phil Spencer was out, because, GDC was recently, and a lot of devs at GDC were kind of going, what the fuck's happening in the industry? Everyone's getting laid off, the games aren't meeting sales targets, like... And Phil Spencer has an interview where he talks a little bit about it. And the headlines sort of become clickbait. The story has become...
No, you should read what he said. It was interesting.
The story has become Phil Spencer blames capitalism for gaming thing. And it's like, that's just one of his many quotes in here. But like, he is talking about like... So gaming has diversified into so many different business models now. And one of which are these like big service games that have become... they're sucking up like all the air in the gaming room. Mm-hmm. And they're taking up people's time, as we said, like over, you know, over 60% of the time.
And this is not a bunch of old men bitching about people playing Candy Crush. Like, they're playing fucking gamey games.
Right. But it's, yeah, mm-hmm. just a few gamey games. But it talks about like things like, things like Game Pass now have made it so you can get access to games in a different way. And mm-hmm. so this is all being compounded with the fact that there's other outside market forces that are making it kind of harder for people to justify what really games are is, for the most part, they're impulse purchases, right? Like, if mm-hmm. you have expendable income. But if the price of your grocery bill has doubled because of inflation, like, where are you going to find that extra money to buy that, that game, right?
And that's sort of my, like, bizarre, and I can't really put this together, but it involves capitalism, because part of our increase in all prices, free market, baby! Like, why does everything want to charge me the absolute most that they can, rather than what they need to succeed as a company? They just want the most they can get from you all the time. Games releasing now want the most of your time, and it's like, nobody watched TV and movies like that. Like, give me a little experience that I can replay for fuck's sake. Give me a smaller experience. I think something is about to be revealed as very broken. A $300 million, $70 game that takes 80 hours. Jesus. Like, you could regret your purchase. Maybe Helldivers isn't even that great. The fact that it, like, didn't cost me shit. It didn't cost me anything and doesn't ask for any money ever, really.
Well, Helldivers is being used as a great example of, like, that game's $40. You know, yeah. Technically, it's a Sony first-party title, but, like, it's not adhering to what you might say is their other type of titles.
Right.
You know, the big, like, Spider-Man 2, $70 game, $300 million dev budget. It's like that title has become this own niche type of live service game, doing it differently than anybody else. But, like,
that's what worries me, though, that, like, whenever we play for the show Valheim or Pal World, I'm immediately sucked in, like, oh shit, beat up this tree and get some wood. Fuck, it takes like 10 hours to start this game. Mm. Like capitalism and money, you want all of my time.
The reason that the clickbait became Phil Spencer blames capitalism is, so gaming last year had growth, but it was very, very slight growth, like single-digit percentage growth, right? Mm-hmm. Which is very different than recent years, where gaming saw a big boom because of the pandemic.
Yeah.
Right? So what a lot of analysts are saying is, we're sort of seeing a correction from the pandemic, where, you know, people are going back to work, they want to go out more to movies, restaurants and stuff, so, and the price of groceries is more expensive, so they have less expendable income for games.
Mm-hmm. I thought that Minecraft announcement of, like, here's where you'll play Rock Band and Rocket League was foolish. Or not foolish, but weird. But, like, it sort of makes sense now if you think, like, some of these live service games that for 10 years have dominated the market become stores, become gateways, beyond just the Epic Store, which I think I saw a news article this week that, like, Epic exclusives didn't really do shit for anybody. And they all went crawling back to Steam, which is the only game maker making games, or the game distributor making gains right now, mm-hmm. The PC audience. So you are talking to a bunch of people who are console oriented, and it feels like it's about to get weird.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the other thing he talks about is, like, and this isn't news if you've been following Microsoft lately, is, so if games, the exclusives, are going to cost like $300 million, you can't afford to keep a game as a console exclusive anymore. So a lot of the business model has sort of gone out the window, even for first parties, where, like, this is why Xbox is like, well, if we're going to spend this much on a game, we have to put it everywhere we can.
That's why MLB The Show is day one Game Pass, despite being a Sony-developed property.
Yeah, yeah. So it's an interesting, I would recommend, go find the story on Kotaku, read about, like, where people are spending their time gaming, because I would venture to guess a lot of you listeners, it's not how you play games, but also then go track down Phil Spencer's interview, because, like, dude's a smart dude, been around in the industry. If you want kind of an insider's view, like, this is what he thinks is going on, like, yeah, you should probably listen to him. Like, he knows what he's talking about.
And he's pretty honest. He's too high up to not be honest. He's pretty fucking honest about what he's talking about. And I do love, anecdotally, every 6 months I meet a new person who just discovered Minecraft, be they 45 or be they 15.
It's still plugging along. It's Minecraft crazy. Is a great game. It's a great game.
And like, I had a friend like, y'all, why have we been sleeping on this Minecraft game? That's the way he phrased it. Like, I wasn't sleeping on this. I played this a ton in 2011.
Yeah. Turns out it's changed a bunch since then.
Yeah, yeah. But he's like, I don't know why people would play anything else. And like, I can't really argue with you. From an adult or a kid's perspective, it's nuts. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Yep. So, just keep playing new games. Buy games, please. Or after you go play the new Sonic game you're going to buy, Sega guy shilling Sonic here, to your local IHOP and check out the new Sonic promotional menu that just launched. You can get access. Let me read some of these menu items for you guys, see if they sound delicious. Ready? Mm-hmm. So you can get on this IHOP
Sonic
menu. Hold on,
Matt, look at me. I'm not looking at this.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Okay, you're going to name
Robotnik?
Items?
Yes, Robotnik has a hollandaise poached egg McMuffin combo. Sonic has a double blueberry pancake combo. My favorite is Tails, who has two of everything, like his
tail.
Yes,
the 2x2x2, which is a special at IHOP. Absolutely.
Oh, look at
yes,
me, look at me. I'm not looking at anything.
I love that you know this. okay, what does Shadow have? What does Shadow have?
Shit. Is it chocolate?
Chocolate pancakes. Although,
oh, look at that. It Amy's a strawberry.
Guys, as I helped with, you know, with like this menu, like this is what I do partially for a job. I'm like, it should just be black coffee. Like, that's what Shadow would just be drinking black coffee.
I love that Knuckles is a chicken sandwich because it's a
It even says it in the description. It's like, it's just a classic chicken sandwich. That's what Knuckles likes.
Yeah. Amy has the sweet strawberry delight.
I have had a lot of trouble sleeping lately. And I've had to wake up at 4 in the morning and I'm hungry and the grocery stores aren't open and I've had to depend on IHOP.
Wow.
That's my behind the scenes. But I don't always go there, but I look at their menu because not to be tangential. I'm starving. I just want a simple breakfast. $26. But at least, that's where IHOP is now. But at least IHOP will unlock shit in a fucking Sonic game.
Yeah. No,
I'm
that's
sure
the
that's
thing
not
is
how you
can,
wanted it pitched, Matt.
They
that
have
a lot
a,
of filthy
no,
language.
Yeah, yeah, come on. No, come on. Please. Let the pitch man pitch his shit. Yeah. You know? So that's the other thing is when you go there, they have the loyalty program. You can earn these coins. You can redeem them. There's an outfit for Amy, like a custom outfit for Amy and Sonic Superstars, or you can go redeem them for full game downloads for games like Sonic Superstars, Sonic Frontiers, Sonic Origins. You got to earn enough coins. Obviously, you got enough coins to get those games. But, like, go check out the Sonic menu at your local IHOP. Do your boy, old Matty, Al a favor.
No ethical consumption, blah, blah, blah. I can earn games from what I'm already doing? Holy
from
shit.
Eating pancakes. You can earn games from eating. I thought this was fun. I don't get to plug my shit much here, so yeah. Check
Me
out
too.
The Sonic menu at your local IHOP.
I am still remarkably driven by Sonic stuff. There's a reason it popped up in my algorithm and I looked at it.
Love it. Let's talk about other things you can do after you go eat your Sonic IHOP meal. You can go play some Game Pass games because Microsoft has announced they do this like in two waves now. They do waves of games coming to Game Pass. So
no,
starting
no, it's
April
like, it,
3rd.
It's every week. It's every Thursday at midnight.
So Lego 2K Drive is now on Game Pass. Cool. I played that game. It's a fun little arcade.
I played it on PlayStation Plus. It's pretty fun.
Played it a bit. Got a code from friend of the show, Dave Rudden.
Oh, here's one of your favorite games coming, Michael. Little Gator Game.
Little Gator Game.
I remember you liking that game quite a bit.
That's pretty sweet.
You?
Yeah. Well, like, it's a really neat idea in that it's like, what if Zelda, not Breath of the Wild, but Wind Waker. It's a little bit of both. Inspired by was just a game of let's pretend with some kids, where it's like this kid is trying to. Wow. His older sister is home from college, and he's like, let's play like we used to. I'm going to set up a big elaborate game. And he's like trying to get her attention away from it and into away from her homework and into the game. And she refuses to pay attention.
What if Wind Waker was set in Gainesville?
Hmm. Sort of.
I apologize, everyone. I really do.
As punishment, I demand you go play EA Sports PGA Tour, which is coming to game.
Don't make me do it. Oh, it reminds me of having to review stuff.
Games. Yeah. Then we got, so coming on the 9th, Kona is, I think that's a day and date game release in Botany Manor. And then this is kind of one on the bigger end of things. They got Shadow of the Tomb Raider Definitive Edition is coming on April 11th. So that is the last in that kind of reboot trilogy.
I will probably... I have not played that game.
Okay. Have you played Harold Halibut?
Oh. No, that one looks really cool. That looks like if Wes Anderson did like a stop motion movie.
Indeed. First I've ever heard of this game, and it looks amazing.
Game is the important part of that, Chris.
My bad.
So, yep. So that is all coming in April. On the other side of that coin, PlayStation announced the PlayStation Plus monthly games. So Immortals of Avium, that was that wizard shooter from EA, right?
Yeah, and very, very lavish, very expensive, very risky, and I think kind of a big flop.
Very expensive.
This seems like they're determined to get it in front of an audience. This is a pretty good way
to do it.
This
is a very odd EA release.
Yeah. There was like a big deal about it. It's like they're doing a new IP. Oh my god! And it's a pretty good shooter, like a first person adventure kind of game where you split your time between like, yeah, I'm gonna wander around and explore and talk to people, and now I'm gonna shoot a bunch of monsters with my magic. I played was pretty fun. I don't know that it's $70 of fun, but like, hey, if you've got PlayStation Plus, this is a great way to check it out.
Like the kind of EA game that is going to cause a baseball player to sue them.
We shouldn't shit on this stuff because this is the stuff we want more of.
I'm not shitting on it. I'm saying it's good. Like, and I'm glad that they're putting it in front of a bigger audience.
It's making a Kurt Schilling reference to the last EA medieval.
I like
new IP.
Thank you.
Shut up, everyone.
Bloody Sock. Bloody Sock. Kurt Schilling. That's all I remember. And Game Studio that went out of business. Minecraft Legends. That is that Minecraft dungeon crawler. My personal take. I'd rather play Minecraft. But yeah, it's fine. And then I don't know if this is pronounced Skull or Skull. It's Skull with one L, but Skull the Hero Slayer, is also coming there. There's also a special Overwatch 2 exclusive PlayStation Plus bundle, which gives you like beekeeper skins and stuff for people.
Cool for a free game. Gimme.
There you go. They also have some, this to me was almost the bigger news. The game catalog, which is the thing you get at the two upper tiers of PlayStation Plus. Day of the Diver is fucking coming to PlayStation Plus game catalog. Yeah. One of the games of the
Godzilla
year.
Godzilla DLC. Oh my goodness.
Day of the Diver is so good.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, so that's coming to PlayStation Plus. That is all the news, though, that is fit to PlayStation Plus.
Sweet. Fit to play. I like it. Okay, let's get into the community segment, which is always just segmenting our community. Last week's question of the week was, tell us about a time you hacked a console or accessory or did a home repair that you're particularly proud of.
Regaman.
Man, it's my time to shine.
What have you done?
Oh, God. So I region modded my Nomad.
Holy shit.
Oh, damn.
He's got a wall of modded things there. Call the FBI.
No, he's got
somebody.
A wall of handhelds, like, stuck up on pegboards.
I did a region mod switch for my Model 2 Genesis, which recently broke, and in trying to fix it, I broke a pin on the main processor. But it still works, kind of.
Alright.
And then I don't know if this counts as a mod, but I bought this like sketchy LCD screen Sega Genesis cartridge from AliExpress.
Ooh, what?
It's
Tell me
a,
more.
It's a cartridge that goes in your Genesis cartridge slot.
Uh-huh.
And it's got a pass-through, so like Sonic and Knuckles, you stick a game on top of it. And then the Genesis powers it, and it's a screen, and then the back of the Genesis AV out plugs into it with a cable. And
now,
so
hold on. Before we get into this...
Mm-hmm.
That sounds more expensive than a TV?
No, it was like $25.
Oh, okay. Damn. That's great.
All right.
Oh, so it's like whatever they put those My Name is Earl Entertainment Weekly ads in.
I mean, hey, have you been on AliExpress? It's a treasure trove of like janky tech that's not very expensive.
So how does it work?
It's just like, so the Genesis just powers it, and then
how well does it work? Sorry.
Oh, not well, so here's the thing. It's like not very practical unless you're like at like a trade show and have no space and you just want to like show off a game. It's like it's a tiny screen.
A Genesis game.
And you want to show a Genesis game. But there is a homebrew scene even now for the Genesis. But like,
leave them alone, man.
So you'll notice
I'm
that
not hearing any of this.
You'll notice that below the Genesis is a boombox from the 90s. Yeah. And I recently modded that to add a line in port. And that was an actual mod that required like soldering and stuff.
Did you solder?
Oh, I soldered. And so now there's a line in port on this old 1991 boombox, which allows me to plug in, if you know, the Model 1 Sega Genesis specifically had a headphone jack.
Yes.
So you can plug it in to a line in port on a stereo. And this particular boombox happens to have really good bass. I've been using this Genesis with this screen cartridge as basically like a little Genesis music jukebox.
Nice.
You sound like a prisoner. like what?
I know. Are you going to show us your prune hooch next? I brewed this prune stuff in the toilet, man.
Mm-hmm. And then I built an Iron Man costume when I was kidnapped by Iranians. My eighth Marvel reference of the podcast.
I love all that.
No one likes.
I love all that, Greg. That's
so
great.
So come hang out. We'll listen to Genesis music on a very nice
boombox. I don't know if we talked about it on the show, but I remember talking to Greg about that in general. Your family sort of skipped the Nintendo, and you were a Genesis family. And you're like a...
Well, we had the NES, and then we went to Genesis.
Right. Yeah. But you were like a Genesis family.
Mm-hmm.
You and your brothers.
Mm-hmm.
You're like the closest thing to someone from the UK that we have here.
Is that? You know, you always make it sound like I'm some weird anomaly, but I remember it being like neck and neck with the Super Nintendo.
Yeah,
where,
it was.
You know,
no, like, I'm with you. I think
I owned a Genesis before the Super Nintendo. I never owned a Super Nintendo, actually. Sega employee here, fuck that. Only ever owned Genesis and all of its variations.
Yeah, and we you know, my parents kind of were wary of video games in general, so we weren't in the habit of, like, asking for a new console. And so we didn't even get a Genesis until 1994, and we didn't even ask for it. My parents surprised us. So, by 94, the Genesis was a very capable machine and all the best stuff was out.
One of the reasons I bought it is that it had affordable games on it.
A little known fact, Greg's actually Amish, and so his parents just made him power the Genesis with like a foot pedal. Like it was like a bicycle setup, right?
No, it was a dead horse. He had to move his legs. there's no bicycles in the Amish community. It's too new.
I did have a friend at one point who never had Nintendo anything growing up, and like, you know, purely a Sega family, and so he was literally like, "What the fuck is Mega Man? Who gives a shit?" I have no nostalgia for that.
There's some Wily Wars on there. Come on, man.
Come on, bro. Well, it wasn't the greatest port, from what I hear.
It's pretty bad.
Yeah.
It's pretty bad. Homebrew stuff. I love these stories, though.
This is great. But getting into the answers from the official Laser Time community on Facebook, Dave Taylor says, regarding the question of the week, I could never solder anything successfully, so I left that to other folks. But I figured out how to soft mod several of my consoles, including the original Xbox, PS2, and PSP. The PSP was the best, though, as I loaded all my favorite emulators on it and could play anything from NES to PS1 classics. My Steam Deck is my general go-to platform for games and emulation now, but the PSP was a wonderful device, down to my playing the E3 version of Symphony of the Night on it and the leaked build of Biohazard 2. As far as more modern consoles, the best I can say is I unmodded an Xbox 360, and that was more work than I ever want to put in again.
Unmodded?
Why would you unmod it? I don't know.
I did that Xbox soft mod. That was an ordeal. I have Brelston's old Xbox. and first of all, it got zapped at some point when it was in my possession, so I had to get another power supply. Oh, man. And then the mod requires like all these very specific.
I mean, I don't know what it is with Xbox power supplies, but I'm on like my fifth.
Yeah, they're wow. notorious.
Yeah, when it gets hit by lightning, I think something happens to them that doesn't happen to the PlayStation.
Mm. Yeah.
They should get a surge protector.
I have an APC and a surge protector.
Yeah, I did learn
I
that
still
lesson.
Live in a land of lightning, Michael.
Born in the land of lightning.
That's my favorite Genesis album, Land of Lightning.
The Electric State.
We're living in a land of lightning. 7 minute drum solo.
Let's see. From the threads.net, Andy_Ryan_KC. Mom took the screws off our old TV, so I couldn't play Atari before kindergarten.
Oh, my God. Man. So, like, the RF switch you had to screw in?
So I removed the back of the TV and hardwired the system into it. She knew then I'd end up in tech. Wait, you're saying this is before kindergarten?
Wow.
That sounds dangerous. Like,
it really does.
There's a lot of chemicals in TV from back then and all kinds of shit, man.
Not only chemicals, but like electrical discharges.
Yeah. This dude's blood is just made of boron.
I know very little about fixing up old arcade machines and CRTs, but like there's several points you can touch a metal tool where you will get very hurt if not die.
Yeah. It basically says like ground yourself. Yeah, all kinds of stuff.
Not something a five-year-old should do.
No, yeah, don't do that.
Artemis Clydesdale says... a question of the week hitting close to home for me. Don't mind if I do. The OG Xbox, around the latter half of its life cycle, I acquired a mod chip, me too, for it called the Zenium Ice. The Zenium Ice that allowed you to boot the console to a custom OS, Microsoft Media Center, and you could fire up anything from classic emulators, ROMs, modern games, movies. It was a full-on computer. And it gave me joy for almost a decade. I don't know if what got me the job in the games industry after my internship, but I remember we needed to take video of so much shit. And, like, we had all these really great Macs, and it was hard to fraps emulators. It was really hard. And my friend's like, I modded an Xbox. So Games Radar... For a long time, you saw a video of anything from the bit era, it was done on my modded Xbox. And I remember one day it burned out, and I felt like nobody liked me.
I remember when Chris got fired from work for frapsing too much at work. That was
frapping off. Didn't happen. It's a lie.
I was frapping as much as I was asked to by people I'm willing to name right now.
That person got fired as well. Yes.
Everyone gets fired eventually.
From the hell site formerly known as Twitter, Anthony James Protasio. One time my friend's Sega Master System took a shit us, so I poured a glass of orange juice.
Come on, Ron Burgundy, you know what he meant.
No, I'm bad at this.
He only reads the teleprompter.
Took a shit on us, is that...
Yeah. Okay. That's implied there, Greg, yes.
I mean, so it could be numerous things, right?
Shit us, come on.
Yeah. Let's go. With us. It could have been took a shit with us.
It's the new slang, man. Took a shit us.
In us.
Shit us is Latin.
Could have been
in us, yes,
Greg. In the United States. It could be a lot of things. So I poured a glass of orange juice in the cartridge slot.
What?
Jesus.
That's not true. This can't be true.
What is the... connection between taking a I turned it upside down on a towel so it would dry out and we went swimming. Later I tried booting it up and it worked. Continued working for years.
This can't
afterwards.
Be true. Orange juice doesn't fix broken consoles.
No. I think what he might be saying like I made it worse but it still worked anyway.
Well, okay.
I don't understand why taking a shit on you would then like what's the
I mean okay, in theory, don't try this at home, kids, but like, yeah, liquid could cause a short that maybe if something was maybe created this new circuit, but don't, this is bullshit. This is can have happened.
You could make it a connection. It's only if you want to torture your Genesis. Pour a bunch of, or your Master System, pour a bunch of orange juice on it, then brush its teeth. Boom.
Listen to your mom, Bimmy.
That's life.
Orange juice. On Blue Sky, or Bisky, Bort Media. at bortmedia.bisky.social says, I got so deep into COD Black Ops 2 that I modded my Xbox controller with screws on the triggers to make the pull distance much shorter.
That's insane.
And got a thumbstick kit that put stilts on the sticks so that movement would be quicker. Can't say how much it helped, but I got diamond skins, damn it.
That is like literally what the Xbox Elite controller did eventually. Mm-hmm. They added lengthened sticks and they put the weird... I actually use that where you could make... It's like the hair trigger setting where it just takes less time to fire the trigger.
Yeah. I don't find that satisfying at all, though. It's just like, it just turns them into little shallow buttons. Like, well, this sucks.
Spoken like a man without good trigger discipline.
Exactly.
It reminds me of my buddy. We were super into Counter-Strike, and a bunch of us were into like serious leagues. Like we're traveling to play 20 years ago, and every first-person shooter gives you recoil in your reticle. Mm-hmm. He's just like, I'm going to measure and put a black dot in the middle of my computer screen permanently, so I'll always know where the center of the screen
That's
is.
That's fantastic.
And I just remember like him looking at his email, I'm like, that is a giant Sharpie black dot on your fucking monitor. Oh my God.
You could have just taken like a plastic sheet and put it in front of your monitor.
Yeah. Huge amount of problems. Dennis Kim on the Blue Ski, DJ Kim, says, I was struggling in Spider-Man 4. How? The game is built to be easy. I hated this the slick DualShock analog sticks. Too slick. I love the Xbox sticks. Just right. I had a sacrificial Xbox controller because I had the same broke shoulder button on my Elite like MCA. Are we calling Matt that now? That's awesome.
So those are my initials.
Transplanted Xbox sticks to DualShock, and wow, all right. And I could finally play Spider-Man on PS4. What? What were you struggling with Spider-Man on PS4?
I didn't know you could just cleanly swap out sticks between those controllers. So that's
I guess I can see it now, but I'm still struggling. Like, what could the problem have been in Spider-Man is an easy game.
Yeah, it's not hugely challenging.
It's hand-holdy.
Yeah. Oh, well, clearly the controller's giving him some trouble. Finally, we have a video response from Cody Smith, always excellent, who says...
Cody here, and when you asked about modded consoles, I got a little excited because I have two to talk about. The first is the new Nintendo 2DS XL. I honestly think that this is an excellent form factor and it just gets rid of the 3D. I did a homebrew mod on this, but I accidentally bricked it when I tried to change the battery out, so honestly I don't know how I'm gonna fix this. But the next project I want to talk about is this beefy boy. I originally bought this Xbox for a video on my channel, but I actually do have many plans to modify this. For example, Retro RGB has a bunch of really cool aftermarket colored shells, and Make Megahertz has a really cool project where you can add a HDMI port and a Project Stellar chip, which allows for a lot of really cool modding on the Xbox. You can also replace the fan with a much quieter fan, and you can upgrade the SSD to just have all 996 Xbox titles on it. It's been a while since I've soldered anything, so if anyone has any tips for me before I get this project going, please let me know, and we'll see you tonight.
Nice. Mm. Thank you, Cody, and everyone else who answered.
I couldn't see it, but it sounded like an episode of 30 Rock with all those whooshaways.
Yeah, and he also, like, I swear to God, that's the same owl sound that we used in, like, the old Games Radar videos. As the little ident thing.
Games Radar video stuff.
Mm-hmm. Later than that. New question of the week, inspired by Matt's shameless Sonic IHOP plug. Matt, what's your favorite video game promotional tie-in of all time?
Ever. This is super meaningful,
etc. I'm gonna say Nintendo cereal, just off the top of my head.
Whoa!
Because much of that was basically just, what if we took Nerds cereal and made it into unidentifiable shapes? But put video game art on the box.
Look at that commercial for the Nerd cereal where they sold. You could get the bowl that had the gateway where you two sides. You can two different types of Nerd cereal, and you can open this dungeon door and mix them together if you dared.
So yeah, Nerd cereal and a Nintendo cereal were the same idea in that like it's a box of cereal with two half-sized bags inside that had different kinds of cereal. Now. So, yeah, I think Nerds was like, one's purple and one's orange. and or red, and then
it's the same with Nintendo. Yeah. One is fruit flavored, one is berry flavored.
Yeah,
they both taste this. What are you talking
one,
about?
One is greenish, the other is reddish. One is Mario, one is Zelda. It doesn't matter. They both taste exactly the same, like all other Ralston cereals.
I am not kidding. Here's a memory I have yet to reveal on the show. When that cereal came out, I had not played Zelda, but I was the biggest Mario fan and Nintendo fan in the world. That led me to believe, I'm being told Zelda is on par with Mario. I should probably get into this. So the cereal led me to like, hey, neighbor, can I borrow your Zelda? This Nintendo cereal got me to play Zelda, and it also tasted better.
Sure.
So mine's kind of an easy choice because it is, to this day, remains one of my favorite flavors. So Mountain Dew, kind of commonly associated with video games at this point, but back in the year of our Lord, 2007, they released a special flavor called Mountain Dew Game Fuel that was like a combo of citrus and cherry flavor, right? Which my favorite Mountain Dew flavor currently is Code Red, which is like just cherry Mountain
Baja
Dew.
Baja Blast, you're an idiot.
No, Baja Blast is okay, but Code Red's way better, in my opinion. But Game Fuel was pretty good, and it was tied to a Halo 3 promotion. And then when Halo Infinite came out, they brought it back. And I was like, oh my god, I just love... I don't know, there's something about Cherry Mountain Dew. They add a little extra citrus in this one. It's like, it's a delicious flavor, and it's just, it's more about the flavor of the soda than the fact that it's tying to Halo. And yeah, you got some like cool stuff you could unlock and all the, you know, it's like DLC stuff, but like... Other than, you know, also I am one of the people responsible for those amazing Guitar Hero KFC boxes from back in the day. That was also a fun promotion to work on. But, like, yeah, the Mountain Dew Game Fuel was pretty epic and also led to the awesome meme image of Jeff Keighley with the Doritos and Mountain Dew.
Matt's responsible for all the, like, satellite Yum Brand promotions.
Hell yeah.
I had the rare experience of having children in my house, and they saw all my Amiibos, and even the 8-year-old was like, why do you have these?
Aren't you a grown-up?
And I was like, when I was a kid and obsessed with Mario, for half a decade, there were no Mario toys. It was only McDonald's. Mm-hmm. McDonald's was the first... people to make mass market Western and Mario anything.
And they all shitty sucked. Trophies that you could get. You remember those?
Yeah. Yeah, yes. But the only thing that was like a thing of Mario, and like it was a suction cup on his asshole and Luigi was chasing a cloud. That was all that there was. So what I have been vaguely trying to collect, I'm super embarrassed by this. I'm going to sound very old. I'm on numerous Facebook groups about McDonald's collectors. I want the display case. That is like, if you're a movie nerd, that is the I collect film prints. I don't want these McDonald's toys. I want the kiosk behind glass that was in the stores. And because it was the most elaborate Nintendo promotion that I remember. Because you could never get anything related to Mario. It was when Mario 3 came out. Mm-hmm.
I remember that.
And so when they look at these Amiibos and like, you find me another Little Mac anything ever released by any Nintendo. It's never happened.
Oh, I forgot a close second. You guys remember when Destiny did that energy drink tie-in?
Yes.
Where you could get like XP... for Destiny, and they might have been Destiny 2, but
no, because the only thing preventing me from engaging with most of these promotions is that you have to go to a separate website.
Mm-hmm.
I had the Destiny app.
Was awesome because I was just redeeming codes and getting like XP boosts in the game. That was like the best of like, hey, this actually helps with gameplay. This is pretty dope.
I also had an incident where I went to a thrift store recently and used my phone to redeem the digital copies of movies people forgot to remove the shit from. And I have like 40 new movies. Mark Wahlberg's Invincible. I own it now. Darkest Hour Winston Churchill movie. It's mine. I did.
Say hi to your mother for me.
Say hi to your mother for me.
So we've talked about various tie-ins between games and fast food or games and soda. But there have been a couple cases where a fast food restaurant, like where they went the other way. Sneak King.
Yep. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Was Burger King making a video game for the Xbox, and they gave it away or sold it for cheap
it was like
or something.
$3.
Yeah.
No, it was like $3 or $7.
There was three games that were $3 each. They had a series of games.
And yeah. I didn't buy a 360 until there was a game under $50. And those came out before that.
Mm-hmm. So it was Sneak King, Pocket Bike Racer, and
Big Bumpin'.
Thank you. The bumper car one.
Yeah, Sneak King is the one that's sort of
that's the memey one
because it's like, insane,
terrifying fat food mascot sneaking up on people.
He looks like a bank robber. You know, he's got that creepy mask.
Mm. Don't you dare compare him to the Hamburglar. Don't you do it, Greg.
But he is sneaky like one. And by all accounts, the game is not bad.
No, it's fine. It's just the other a games very basic stealth game.
The other games are rip-off of existing titles. There is nothing like Sneak King.
Yeah.
Or at least there wasn't before they made it.
They made a Metal Gear fucking Burger King game, guys. Come
Splinter
on.
Cell this without is... any action. You're just sneaking up on people and executing stealth kills by giving them free breakfast food.
And 5 years ago, there were plenty of like.
You don't think this is a kill, but wait 50 years.
I've been watching a bunch of shows on the Internet Archive with commercials still left in.
Yes.
And you see like all these channels like go to CartoonNetwork.com, go to ComedyCentral.com. They sent all these people to the internet, which would then murder their whole business. but they're sending in Cartoon Network and Nickelodeon to play these awful fucking Flash games. When Sneak King came out, like, this is an HD game. Like, it's beautiful compared to the other promotional games that you had. And I had one more dumb question in regards to this. Because I was obsessed with it as a kid. I saw the commercial twice. I never found them except in one liquor store 4 years later. The Mario sodas that came out in America. Did anybody get to taste one?
No. I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah, there were multiple Mario sodas. Yoshi had a flavor. It was around Mario World.
Yuck.
It wasn't affiliated with any, like, not even, like, sub RC Cola. They were in little cans, and I never really got to taste one. And I always wanted to. It's too late now.
I never knew that was a thing.
Yeah. It was a very, very small campaign. Like, I forget what Pepsi had a huge Mario campaign.
Speaking of that, I was also going to shout out the Pepsi Man game.
Pepsi Man!
Which is fantastic.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one. Yeah.
I believe we know the owner of the Pepsi Man costume, should he ever reveal himself.
So, Chris, I'm looking at the cans. I know what you mean now. So I saw they do have Mario energy drinks now that I saw in a candy shop recently. But, like, those are still hard to find as well. But the sodas were mini cans, right? They were like the short cans.
They were the short cans, but they all had, like, as a kid, like, oh, this one's bubblegum flavored or berry flavored. Well, like, ugh.
Wait, so now, the ones I'm looking at were, they were branded, they were just Shasta drinks.
Oh, they were Shasta?
Like
I said sub RC Cola.
So like Shasta, that's which is like almost a generic brand.
Isn't
it like
the Safeway store brand, or is they just
almost,
purely regional?
I think it is just a brand, but
it's above clearly Canadian of the era.
So Princess Toadstool Cherry, Mario Punch, Luigi Berry, Yoshi Apple, is this the one you're thinking of?
Yes,
and
absolutely.
They're all touted as having vitamin C. Get the fuck out of here. Get the fuck! If your kid is getting their vitamin C through these sodas, I'm calling child services on you. Like,
I love the idea of child services coming in. Like, I don't know, my kid just can't get enough vitamin C. That's that's why there's a sea of cans beneath.
You mean
this
the kid
console.
Missing his two front teeth because all he drinks is fucking Mario soda?
Like, yes, the kid on an insulin drip.
All right, so what is your favorite video game promotional tie-in of all time? It can be food, it can be... Think cross-branding. Don't just think like, I really like the new Mario toys that are tied in with the movie. Like, no, make it a little weirder. Make it a little
no,
more...
No, yeah. I'm thinking like things like, you know, partnerships with big brands. Like, not licensed... Licensed goods are different. That's a whole... Uh-huh.
Before Matt brought it up, like... I thought the Sonic thing was notable because yeah, we've had like double XP drinks, but like free games, that's kind of new. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know that that's been offered before. And
I was feeling generous, Chris. What shall I say? I don't know.
I know, but that is not insignificant. And it's like, I already like Sonic stuff. And like, oh, I can earn Sonic stuff and buy new cool. Cool. Yep.
All right. Awesome. Well, let us know what your favorite tie-ins are. Go to the official LaserTime community on Facebook. There'll be a thread there where you can answer. Or ping us on the various socials, Twitter, Threads, Blue Sky, at VG Apocalypse, and we will read answers on next week's show. That has been our show. Greg, once again, anything you'd like to plug?
Atomic Girl!
Yeah, look for Atomic Girl on streaming sometime in the next month or two. Yeah.
She's an atomic girl living in her atomic world.
Oh, you know it.
Greg, are we going to have you going on tour with Lizzie anytime soon? Just, are you going to open for Lizzie?
Lizzie has been kicking ass. Check
yes,
you
yes. Know, sure has.
Yeah,
sure has.
Plug that. Lizzie's new album. Yeah,
Teens in Trouble.
Teens in Trouble. Like, this is mine. I forget the album title, but like...
There's a new LP or new EP.
I own the LP. It's fucking excellent. It is really, really good. And so buy Lizzie's album for real. It's fucking awesome.
I'm just saying, if you hang around us enough, you may have musical talent as well. Like, we awaken latent yes. musical ability in people.
She's so, atomic yes. girl!
Teens
That's
in
why.
Trouble.
You heard that?
What's Mine is the name of Lizzie's album.
Living in an atomic world! Taking atomic train!
I don't need to release this thing.
Wait, I feel like we should just cut the episode to black, like the end of Sopranos, which we're singing.
I mean,
don't
good, because
stop.
That was all I had for the improv.
Oh, that's all right, okay.
You're spot Fair. On.
We got anything else to plug?
Yeah, Patreon.com/LaserTime. I don't know why it's so important to me. You may have heard the promo earlier, but we did an episode of 80s in Depth, Things We Can't Cover on 30/2010, which comes out every week. That are 40 years old, not 30, 20, and 10 years old. And Neverending Story, I spoke to you guys about it last week, like, and JR said in the promo, it might be the movie I've watched the most, weirdly, from the 80s. I love Neverending Story. There's nothing like it. It's beautiful.
That's one of those kind of felt like it was always on movies back then.
Right.
Like
but it's morose and weird and... I think Steve put a Steve from Cinema Arcade and Puppet Masters Castle Freaks was like it's very European and the music is also very like Europop. And
would it surprise you to know that it's based on a German novel?
No, it's a full German production that we'll go into that on the show.
Is
it couldn't
really?
Have happened without really? Das Boot. Huh. Yeah, its original title is in German.
Hmm. You know how I kind of knew that as a kid is. The breasts on those statues should not have been as large as they were.
The fact that there's nipples in a kid's movie, like...
Yes.
Yeah.
Statues that shoot lasers at you with...
Yes.
Yeah, come on. That
Yeah,
felt
you
a
can't
odd.
Be showing them tibbies in America.
Hmm. Yeah.
My girlfriend hates me calling them tibbies. And tibbies? I really like doing it. I not only do that, I go, sweet tibbies.
I just want to picture her turning to me like, Chris, we've agreed. You're supposed to call them tickle bitties.
Tickle bitties. Tibbies, guaranteed to gross out the person with breasts in your life. Tibbies.
Jesus Christ.
How do you follow tibbies? You're good. After that.
I don't know, but there's a ton of stuff on Patreon and more stuff coming soon. So, yeah.
All right.
Support the show. I love you guys.
Well, as always, you can visit us at vigigameapocalypse.com. How about that? We got our domain back. Hooray. It just leads to our RSS feed, but it's something. You can also visit us at the official LaserTime community on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter, Threads, and Blue Sky at VG Apocalypse, or follow me personally at any of those places at Wikiparaz, WikiParaz. That's been our show. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next week.
you for being nice to me for no reason.
I'm
going to be ruthless to you, Greg.
All right. That's close to nice.